Thank you, Jefferson. My name is Irene Singo. I'm the acting CFO of the Department of Rural Development.
My honorable members, my name is Ntutuzi Shabane. I'm the DG of the Department of Rural Development and Reform.
Morning, Chair members. My name is Alton Greaves, the Chief of Staff in the Ministry.
All right. I only know the two ladies from the Auditor General's office. I don't know who else is here who may need to be.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Morgan Matar from the National Treasury.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Benny C. I'm from the Auditor General as the Manager.
Morning. My name is Jim Yan. I'm the Auditor Senior Manager on the Department of Rural Development from HSA.
Morning, members. Mason Gow, Auditor General.
Good morning. Sakane Maduleke from the Auditor General, National Leader for Solicitor for Auditor Services.
Chairperson, Honorable Members. My name is Kim Makuito, Deputy Auditor General.
Morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. My name is Naeem Sirat. I'm the Corporate Executive for Specialized Audit in the Office of the Auditor General.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Jobs Lorenz, Business Executive responsible for performance auditing.
I'm Sail from Performance Audit Manager for the audit.
For those who were here earlier, we made a request that the phone should be switched off. right, let's allow members of parliament to introduce themselves, and we'll start right there in the Eastern Cape.
Thank you. My name is Ethel Trollope. I'm a member of the Standing Committee of Rural Development and Reform.
Good morning. Leon Lodge, member of SCOPA.
Good morning. My name is Pierre Robbie. I'm a member of SCOPA.
Good morning, I'm Gertrusan and I'm a member of the committee.
Zoe Sidlenopa, I'm a member of the development committee.
Good morning, Sipong Fulvius, a member of SCOP. Good morning, Roy Ainsley, a member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Tabitha Silva, I'm a member of SCOP.
Morning. My name is Faith Mutambi. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Stone Cesar, and I'm a member of the Rural Development Portfolio Committee.
Morning. I'm Yenis Malongo, member of the Rural.
Alright, thanks. I'm from the Chamber Bhoti. I chair the committee. Comrade Minister, welcome once again. we have had engagements with the department before on issues that we believed needed some level of clarification relating to the annual report, after which we have made recommendations in terms of what we think must be done to assist the process of getting things to the level that we all desire them to be. So today will not be any different in that regard. except that the additional element will be a report of the Auditor General on the use of consultants in the department. We want to start from the premise that we understand and appreciate that from time to time there will be need for specialized, you know, services or skills to be utilized. But our concern will always be to check whether it was indeed an absolute necessity. Is it actually a reflection of certain things not, you know, being in place? And how well these get monitored, to what extent do they tell you, to what extent do we have skills transfer, to what extent are they a stopgap measure in our quest to enhance the capacity of the state to perform its functions. So I think that is the context within which I would want to engage around this issue. And Dr. George and Mutambi will deal with the issues around the annual report broadly. Save to repeat that which must be repeated throughout this year, that the work that the department does should, in a very, very direct manner, roll back the effects of the law that was passed 100 days ago, the Native Land Act, that created the socio-economic conditions that we have today. The natural resources being the competitive advantage that we have in this country and in Africa, I'm sure that the added pressure is there on the department to serve as a catalyst in seeking to reverse this unacceptable and unsustainable situation. So the work that this department does place it right at the center of these long, long overdue processes of redress, correcting the historical injustices, and ensure that on the 27th of April, we don't say we are free, meaning we only have the right to cast the ballot every 5 years, and life continues as it has been for decades. So it is therefore imperative that as we deal with the work of this department, it must locate itself in that context, the centrality of its role in the context of all the things that we thought to do and thought we had resolved them in 1994. The work of the department is right at the center. So if there's no fire on all cylinders, it undermines basically everything else. So that's going to keep that context. I'll hand over to Comrade Roy, but the minister will be free and would actually be happier to be able to come in and assist actually make input. But at the end of the session, we'll still give you the opportunity, if there is anything that you feel needs to be conveyed, to do so. But throughout the engagement, would want to feel free to come in and make some action. Comrade Roy, I'll hand
over to you. Chair, thank you very much. You are quite correct. There is nothing wrong in principle with the use of consultants, and the Auditor General in this report makes that point. But what we have to do is to ensure we are getting value for money, that funds used on consultants, are they not perhaps better spent on building in-house capacity, and also the question of transferring skills. And we are concerned, if you look at page 75 of the AG's report, we are concerned at the very dramatic increase. If you look at page 75, there's a nice color graph there. It shows you, in particular, the red indicates a very dramatic increase in the use of consultants between 2009 and 2011, when we are told that well over 1 billion rand was spent on consultants. Now, if you have your annual reports with you, there is a very, very useful table, and I think we must commend the department on presenting us with a long list on, I think it's page 162, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, page 162 of the annual report shares a long detailed list of item by item, the type of consultancies used. And there we must commend you. It's one of the few annual reports I've seen where we are given that kind of detail. Although we may not be happy with the detail you've given, but thank you for giving it anyway. Now, if you look at the figure on the bottom of page 162, I've just said there the graph there shows a dramatic increase in the use of consultants. Well, if you look at page 162, it is even more dramatic. I invite members in their own time to add the 400, let's say half a billion, the 500,000 rand spent on consultants in the previous financial year, which does not appear on graph. The graph in AG's report ends for the 2010-2011 financial year. I invite you and members in their own time to sketch in the latest figures. It is even more dramatic than the graph we have shown on page 75. So we are very concerned at the escalation of the use of consultants. I'm going to deal with, in the interaction with this report, I'm going to deal with four items on page 75. The skills audit and human resources, the re-engineering project, and I'm going to look at the outsourcing human resources recruitment, then at evaluation services, and finally at the leasing, the abandoned leasing data system. First, the skills audit and human resources re-engineering project. If someone could explain the difference between those two. Why, I've got a very simple question, why did you need two consultants? You appointed two consultants for a total value of over 90 million rand, one to do the skills audit, one to do the re-engineering project. Why two firms, two consultants, why not one? Because certainly the skills audit flows from the re-engineering project. In my layman's view anyway, you would quite easily have appointed one service provider to do both tasks, and then maybe there would not have been the time gap between completing these two projects and implementation. So it's just a simple straightforward question, if you can explain, why two firms, why not one? That's the first question.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, the project of organizational re-engineering was one of several projects that the department embarked on at that time. Now the question is, why two firms? There was a consortium of firms that were appointed at the time, and the projects were defined differently. Yes, the project of skills development feeds into the organizational re-engineering project. But they were running parallel. They were not running at the same time. The re-engineering exercise needed to determine a whole lot of issues other than the question of whether the organization had the necessary skills to execute its mandate. That is where the decision, in terms of the structure of the contract at the time, it was decided that they should. There are different projects. They have different outcomes, but those outcomes are related outcomes. Hence, when the re-engineering project were not progressing as it ought to have been, they have to be, we have to stall the skills audit exercise.
Okay, I appreciate why two different consultants. Why simultaneously? I think you appointed the one on the 14th of December and the other one on the 15th of December, something like that. And the result was that Skittles audit was then held up, as I think you've indicated, because the engineering project was not complete. The whole process was held up, if I'm not mistaken, by 12 months. Why not? Why simultaneously? Why not first re-engineering project, get that exercise completed, and the natural follow-on from that would have been the skills audit. But this then being done simultaneously resulted in a lengthy delay in project. Maybe it's too late to, I mean, it's water under the bridge, but for our own experiences, it would be useful knowing going forward if you would follow the same system.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Ainsley is raising a very relevant question. We now have the benefit of hindsight. Even if they were all appointed at the same
time. We need a lot of foresight. That would assist us going forward. But, I hear you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We are going to draw that from the lesson.
Okay. Just put on your mind.
Our focus was 7 months late in completing their project over the contract time, and as I've indicated, I held up the whole process for 12 months. Did you levy any penalties against them for being late? 7 months, which resulted in a 12-month delay of the entire process. Any penalties levied against them? If not, why not?
Jefferson, I'm afraid we did not levy any penalties on this. In terms of the delay in the contract, I'm unable to say that these are the following valid reasons why at the time we did not levy any penalties.
Throughout this report, Chair, there's poor contract management, and this is an example. Surely in any contract, if a service provider I delay in delivering my service, I must be penalised. But this is not the only example in this department where there are contracts poorly managed and poorly formulated. It's not right that a consultant causes a delay in this very vital project for almost for over a year and gets away with it. There are no penalties. Sends out the wrong kind of message to other service providers. Stop me from lecturing. If I'm lecturing, please tell me to carry on.
No, that's fine. Actually, maybe we should find out what the reason for the delay.
Yeah. Thanks, Jefferson. I appreciate the concern that the members have voiced. It is true that our project management has been weak in managing the whole contract around this project. And one of the contributing factors, when the project was designed, there was a DGP Corporate Services was running with that project. And with the Chief Director, Human Resources, and a consortium of people as project steering committee, were to make sure that all the activities of the project are properly adhered to. Unfortunately, during the same period, the DGG Corporate Services, who was the chairperson and the CFO, got transferred from to another department. The chief director was responsible for HRM during that period. In the same year, resigned. So the key personnel...
Transferred to another department, you mean within...
Within government.
To another department outside rural development.
Yes, outside rural development. So those were the key people that were running this project. When we do the analysis, we realized that this had a contributing factor because now all of a sudden new people had to come in and understand what the project was all about. And I think it's evident that in terms
of... That's why you could not levy any penalty from them. It was more on your mind.
I think the weakness in the strength of the project management committee also contributes, because when you have to lay a penalty, you have to prove beyond reasonable doubt.
I wanted you to say, so we leave it at that.
That is the theme throughout this report, lack of planning, lack of contract design, poor contract management. And that is why we are questioning whether we are getting value for money and whether the amounts that you are spending on consultants are justified. Now I go on to the question of invoices, which Auditor General also raises. He says that invoices totaling to both consultants, invoices totaling well over 10 million rand, were paid, and there was insufficient documentation. Insufficient documentation as to why these amounts should have been paid, and including lack of evidence that progress was being monitored by project management. So he paid out 11 million rand on the basis of insufficient documentation. How did this happen? If I pay money out, I pay against the invoice, which details all the necessary and required information. So here we have a case where money is being paid out on the basis of insufficient invoices, insufficient documentation. How does that happen?
Chairperson, in the case of invoices, our strength always comes with when an invoice is issued, there's a delegated authority who looks at the invoice and say, identified that the service has been rendered in line with the deliverables that we agreed upon before time. And the hearing committees were one of those areas where before an invoice for the milestone paid, they will review whether the service has been rendered satisfactorily. But coming back to this specific case, the contract was designed in such a way that the disbursement is not the full 11 million that had a problem. The profiles that needed to be done were done, and the line managers were happy with the service that had been rendered. But there was a in terms of the
set of problems. You mean these very same people who did not monitor the project, they were happy with the invoices.
And the chief director was acting in that capacity. The issue here was that the disbursement had a clause that says disbursement will be paid on 10% straight fee of the contract amount. And that was what was agreed upon when the proposal was received, on the basis that normally when you have got a service provider, you don't keep receipts of their own S&T cost and their own accommodation cost. So that was the point of reference. So
let us not haggle about the amount. If I add the figures given by Auditor General, it comes to over 11 million. Let's not haggle about the amount, let's talk about the principle. How can you pay out monies with insufficient documentation? How can you say you were satisfied services rendered if there wasn't the documentation indicating that the project was monitored effectively, that milestones were met where they should have been met? If you don't have the documentation, and I fail to see then how you can be satisfied that payment was justified. That's simply the point I'm making.
I agree with the principle, but there was sufficient this is a performance audit. There's a difference between a documentation that we say, if we were to be put on the best standard of project management, what would be the appropriate supporting document? But there's documentation that takes you to a certain level to say the service has been rendered, I'm happy, I requested 980 job profiles, I didn't see job profiles, on that basis I can see. So I don't agree that there was no supporting documents
so
for the payment of 11 million.
Disputing the finding of the Auditor General where he says on page 76, invoices amounting to 11 million rand plus were authorized for payment, but the invoices were not detailed and did not have supporting detail of all documentation for disbursements. That's his finding. Now, are you disputing that finding?
Well, you're saying the finding is right, but this is not a problem.
It doesn't matter. Just concede the point, Chair, we'll move on. I'm not going to move on unless they concede that the Auditor General is quite correct, that they made an error of judgment. Then we can move on, but I'm not going to sit here all day until you concede the point. The AG is right, you're right.
I concede that the supporting document could have been better.
Thank you.
And that is a matter of concern for us. And whether I say that is substantive or worrying over nothing.
should not be a point of concern in terms of what you're explaining later on, that you know this is how things are done, this is how things should be done. I think that's the substance of the point he's making. But
we agree that our documentation could have been better. We must strengthen our project management principles so that everybody else in supporting documents can see all the milestones ticked one by one in line with terms of reference. That part we agree so much that we have to improve on our project management in the costing area.
Which part will we disagree on?
I'm disagreeing with the part that says the full 11 million did not have supporting documents. Because the supporting documents must have not, we always say supporting documents, the supporting documents must be sufficient enough for the third person to make the
decision. No, it must be sufficient enough for the Auditor General to make a finding. That is the only principle. Conceded the point. Can we move on?
Yeah.
No. Okay. Let the point be clear. I think if you look at page 76, it says paid without evidence of progress monitored. So for us, the committee will always be worried if money is paid when there is no proof that progress for which money is paid and monitored. And if you go to skills or project, the second bullet point, invoices were signed off and paid, although the description of services rendered were not detailed as per the approved project plan. And I was saying that is the point of concern for us. So that's why I wanted to check where I would disagree.
You are paying out funds with virtually no invoice. You are just paying.
Yes, Commissioner.
Thanks very much. Thanks also for the opportunity. I want to agree with the committee. I'm sure the officials sort of agree. I agree absolutely. Because we, if they were to tell you now, because of this problem of insufficient information and therefore poor reporting, we have developed a management information dashboard in the department. Because when we ask for information on each of the projects we're running, you never get that information. And our M&A unit has said the information that we're getting is not credible. And I'm talking about internal processes, subsequent discussions we have with the AG, which has been very, very helpful to us. I want to concede on this point. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the human resources plan that emanated from these two consultants, skills audit and the re-engineering. It was approved only 5 years later, after completion. Approved. Page 79 of your response, you talk about the age of planning being approved. Has it been fully implemented? You acknowledge, page 79 in your response, that the plan has been approved. I would have preferred seeing the word there, not approved, but fully implemented. We've just paid over 19 million rand for this combined project to create a human resources plan. You talk about the thing being approved. I want to know if it's been fully implemented.
Chaplain, the answer is no. There are some parts of the plan that were implemented, as the report says. When the project started, we started as a Department of Land Affairs. But in 2009, the mandate, the department changed, and the mandate changed. And therefore, we couldn't fully implement a plan that was conceived under the Department of Land Affairs and implement it fully without firstly sitting down and saying, here is my mandate now. Is this plan talking to the current mandate? That's one of the key reasons why we couldn't implement the plan fully. The second reason, Chapter C, we couldn't implement the plan fully was that the plan said this is the optimal capacity you are going to need to run the department. But optimal capacity does not always equal available human and financial resources.
and therefore there had to be reprioritization of which part of the structure of the plan would be implemented given the limited resources. Thank you very much.
Has you reported this 19 million rand of food system waste for expenditure? That's what it is. You spent 19 million rand on a system after 6 years, which you approved, oddly enough, but not implemented. Actually, it's wasteful and fruitless expenditure. Or do you hope at some stage to re-engineer the re-engineering plan to fully implement? I see this as wasteful expenditure, 19 million rand, on something that's not been used.
We did not report it as such. One, because we are saying there are elements of the plan that were implemented. And two, with the change of the mandate of the department, we couldn't proceed with the plan as it was without saying, are all the elements of this plan relevant for the mandate? And therefore proceed with it. That's for that reason that we couldn't implement it. And two, I have said it was relevant for the new mandate. So when enough financial resources to finance the full implementation of the plan. And for that reason, we have had to reprioritize and not fill in, not implement the plan fully.
So do you have a human resources plan now in place? Do you have a human resources plan in place?
We have an incomplete plan. Let me say.
Do you intend spending additional funds then on an updated human resources plan?
No, Chairperson. The updating we have been doing, we have been doing it internally within the department for a while. There aren't any plans at the present moment to bring in more consultants to help us with the current plan.
But can you confirm, if you look at page 79 in your response, can you confirm that you are still using consultants in human resource related matters? You speak in your response from page 79, the second paragraph, you say you are now using the DPS accredited service providers. Are those consultants? In the following line, you say that you are using advertising agencies to place advertisements. So, in this off plan of yours, this incomplete human resources plan of yours, are you in fact still using consultants in key positions?
Yes, Jefferson. What we decided was the using of the consultants in the screening of the applications, in the shortlisting on behalf of on the shortlisting and the skills qualification which we had to use the services of the consultants. We have now begun to use our own internal resources in the screening of the applications. We are using SACWA for the checking of their qualifications. We are using DPSA, accredited panel of consultants, yes, for competency assessment of candidates.
Chair, during this period, I would move on to the next point now, dealt with by the Auditor General on page 76 of his report. You've outsourced human resource recruitment on page 76. Now, one of the reasons you use for, you say you had outsourced HR recruitment is with a lack of capacity in the HR directorate, one of the reasons why you've done that. You spent 48.7 million rand on outsourcing human resource recruitment. Would that money not have been best spent building your own internal capacity within the department rather than having consultants do the work? So you spent $48.7 million on outsourcing human resources. Why did you find it essential to do that? Could you not have spent that money rather on building up your own capacity within the department?
Thank you, Chair. The point that is being raised is a valid one. The decision to outsource this work resulted, as the report said, at the time there was insufficient capacity, and it was taking far too long in the department to fill in vacancies. And I am sure the audit of the previous of the financial years at the time will show that the turnaround time was unacceptably too long. So
you had officials who were not performing, and instead of hiring them and hiring those who can do the job to get consultants, because these ones are incompetent.
You had people there who were not able to perform, but they stayed on anywhere. You had consultants come and do their work.
I'm not saying that is entirely the reason, honourable members. I'm saying there were people, and for the number of posts.
In terms of the first two bullet points on page 76, lack of capacity in the Human Resource Directorate, low and lengthy recruitment process. I think those two bullet points talk to the ability of those in the directorate to deliver or perform their duties. I think a question arises in that context.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I am saying it was a combination of reasons. Indeed, the ability of those who were in those positions at the time was itself a challenge. But if you look at the number of posts that we had to deal with, I think at the time there were over 1,000. Coupled with that, with the experience of slow turnaround time, the decision at the time was, let's bring in people who can help us speed this process up to build capacity. Now, the idea was it will happen fast, but obviously, if you keep people who do this work for you for this long, you may as well have employed your own staff, you may as well have used this money to build your own capacity. If it was a 6-month thing, a 12-month thing, and that's it, I would agree that it was a critical intervention, well managed. But the fact that it kept it much longer, and it was a problem.
It is very difficult in the first place.
Yeah. Did you not do a cost-benefit analysis to say, well, if it cost us 48 million rand to employ consultants, what would it cost us to retrain our existing staff? What would it cost us to build our own capacity? Did you not do that cost-benefit analysis, which is required by the Department of Public Service Administration? They say before you enter into any of these kinds of contracts, do a thorough analysis first to see if it's not more cost-effective to build internal capacity. It seems to me you didn't do that, despite the fact you had people in the department who simply went out the checkbook and signed up consultants to the tune of 48 million rand. Did you do that kind of cost-benefit analysis as required by law?
No, there wasn't that cost-benefit analysis as you described. What was presented?
But the Chair, they should have been. That was directed from Cabinet in 2001 to Public Service and Administration, that before you enter into contracts and consultants, you do a cost-benefit analysis. Who is the person responsible for not undertaking that cost-benefit analysis that got us into spending this 48 million? Who is the single person we can hold responsible for that? But not the body of the law. Is there one person that we can finger?
Jefferson, there was a detailed analysis done on the basis of the difficulties of recruitment, the inability of the existing staff. I can vouch that and say that analysis was exactly to the letter in line with the prescripts.
I must have misheard you. I thought when I asked questions, you said no cost benefit analysis has been done. Now, are you saying a cost-benefit analysis was done?
An analysis was done. I don't want to say it is a cost-benefit analysis as you describe it. There was an analysis, there was a very strong motivation that was made on the basis of the frustration.
Public Service Administration doesn't talk about analysis, they say you must do a cost-benefit analysis. It wasn't done, let's move on. It wasn't done.
That's fine.
Well, if it was done, it must have been a misleading one. For surely one, or it has pointed to the fact that it was going to be costly but was nonetheless ignored. So either way, it is not assisted.
It was inappropriate. It didn't assist.
All right.
And in this particular contract, it is a very strange contract. There is no limit on the unit cost of activities undertaken in terms of the contract, which means there is no ceiling amount. It was almost financially open-ended. You could spend and spend and spend. There was nothing in the contract that said you may not spend beyond this point. It's extraordinary. And we are very lucky that as a result, only 19 million rand of the original contract of 28 million was spent in this way. No ceiling amount in that contract. Who drew up that contract? And what action has been taken against that person? An open-ended financial contract. It's unheard of.
I hope it's not the consultant.
We are lucky, Chair. Very lucky, because we only pay an additional 19 million rand above the original contract price of 28 million. These consultants could have gone on and on. They could still be pending today. Maybe the conscience has bothered them and they said, well, let's stop at 19 million extra. But who is responsible for drawing up such contracts?
It was drawn up by the head of human resources.
Now, that person's still around. What action was taken against that person?
There wasn't action taken at the time, except that a decision was taken to terminate the contract.
No. To terminate the services of that person?
No.
Why not?
At the time, Chairperson, the department came to the conclusion that
it did not consider it to be a serious transgression. Because if you had, I'm sure you would have taken action. The fact that no action was taken was okay.
In addition, your department, this committee, looks at this contract, reads through it, studies it, and approves it. Was any action taken against the this committee for this additional expenditure of 19 million rand, which, as I point out, could have been far more? I'm sure the answer is no, but if you can just confirm. But no action was taken against the bid committee that oversaw this contract that signed off on it.
No, there wasn't action taken against the bid committee, Chairperson.
See, there's no consequence, Chair. Again, we come across this, unfortunately, department after department where there are no consequences for serious financial mismanagement. And because there are no consequences, these things will continue. Next year, this time, we'll be sitting with the same problems. If there are no consequences, for these kinds of misdemeanors. And I'll move on to the third item for the AG, and that's valuation services. During 2007 to 2010, you paid on every 35 million rand per year for valuation services. Now, it is your approach that all property valuation services for land restitution and land reform have been contracted out to consultants. So all this work of valuing these properties is in the hands of consultants. Why have you not put your in-house capacity so you yourselves can do this valuation?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. From the beginning of the land reform program in 1994, rightly or wrongly, a policy decision was taken that the people who conduct valuation for the department to determine whether the price it pays is market related, because that is the terminology at the time, the valuation had to be done by an independent valuer so that the buyer is also feeling that this is not a valuer who works for the department.
Let's say it's got to be done by a consultant. Independent can be very problematic. Independent from who? How?
Yes. It was outsourced to professional valuers who are consultants for the reason that I have said. That was a policy decision at the time that there had to be a professional valuers who are accountable to their own profession so that they are seen to be fair and objective to both parties. That was the rationale at the time. And the department continued with that process. What the department should have done was to build internal mechanisms to make sure that even if we outsourced the work, we had people who would be able to analyze, critique what the professional valuers have done so that we make sure that we are heading ourselves with what they propose to us to be a fair and equitable price or a market-related price. We did not do that for a long time up until recently where internally we started bringing in independent valuers. So the point that Honorable Ainsley is raising is to say, could you not have used that money? We're saying from that experience, we have now since taken the decision under the new department, the decision to begin to build that capacity in-house of bringing in this one.
Okay. On page 79, there's something I don't understand. Perhaps you can explain to me in your response. Page 79. You indicate there that sometimes you not use the valuation report as a basis for the offer to purchase. So we spend 25 million rand annually on the whole valuation exercise. They come with their report, but as I understand your response on page 79, you sometimes don't use these reports. Is that correct? Now, in what circumstances would that happen? Why are we spending 25 million rand annually on reports you don't use? And under what circumstances would you discard such a report?
There will be several such instances. One, the sale can fall through. In the process of getting this work done.
Which paragraph is that?
This is their response to page 79. Yeah. B, comments from the department.
Yeah.
It's item 2,
yeah.
Valuation services.
Which line?
At the very last entrance, this includes creating a standard term of reference for the valuation of different farms, which will make it easier to do cost comparisons and create an audit trail for the decision. For the decision not to use the valuation report as a basis for the offer made to purchase.
Okay.
So the indication there, they have these reports, but sometimes they don't use them, and I'm keen to know.
Okay.
When does that happen?
As I said, there could be different reasons why you do that. You can commission a report. For instance, if the valuation report must help you to decide whether you should pay the price that the property is on the market for. If, for instance, your own valuation report says the property is 1 million and the seller says the property is 500,000, you can use that report because it wouldn't be the basis. Because the idea is not to pay more than what
you should pay.
How
often does it happen?
It may not be very often. It may not be very often.
It would be very useful for us to know if we are getting value for money. We are paying 25 million rand to these consultants. So it would be, your question is quite correct, Chair. It would be useful to know just more or less what percentage of these valuation reports you discard. 10%, 20%, 25%. Is it a rare
account?
Is it rare that you would discard the valuation report?
Jefferson, we have done an analysis of this exercise that the honourable members are asking for. We do not have the report. We can make it available to the members. But what we are saying is that sometimes the reports can be discarded, because if, for instance, you have commission reports and there's a dispute between the department and the land owner, or conclusion of the transaction take long, the evaluation can expire. And then the land owner says, given the timeline, the property is appreciated by another 10%. At the time you valued this property, it was an X amount of money. Now I want 10% more than what you valued it for. Or I have made this investment. Therefore, what your report is saying is no longer valid. I want a fresh report. In which case, you would then discard that report, because it wouldn't serve the purpose of negotiating and concluding.
And then if you discard this report, then what other report do you use, or what criteria do you use to arrive at this purchase price? Or do you then employ another...
Unfortunately, you have to get another valuer. Unfortunately.
This is again verging on wasteful expenditure, I think. Certainly, if it is the part of the department, the time it takes between the receiving the valuation report and making the decision, if that is laid at your door, that is definitely wasteful and fruitless expenditure. We need to do an analysis at some stage of, in fact, what is happening in that area. To what extent are we wasting money on these valuation reports, discarding them, getting others, taking our time to make decisions on these matters?
I give you a compliment, Minister. I met some less laymen who say the verification process to verify the validity of their claim has been done 5 times. And when I met them in the north, they had notified that to be 6. And in all these instances, they haven't received any report. And what I didn't ask was whether this is done by consultants or not. So it comes to the same issue. You hire people, they do a job, that report is of no value, you will have to hire. I think that's what it is coming to.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Well, I have seen negotiated settlements which would be prices far less than what would have been the valuation price. I've seen that. It's not been mentioned by the DG. It's a very important part of the transactions on land. You see, the problem with department historically is that we have used very low-level officials. You corrected this. We have used very low-level officials to negotiate with lawyers, with state agents and so on. And we actually have been sitting ducks in this regard. And we've discussed this. I'm saying this because we've discussed it and corrected it. Part of correcting it is to employ these values, these professional values in our department. But if you really, I hope they have told you that. One of them didn't even complete a month because he could not keep up with the challenge of having to go to the field and do these valuations on the spot, because we don't want desktop valuation reports.
Yeah.
He didn't finish a month. We employed 3 that 2 now. We still have to employ others now again. We're going to delay further and further this because we cannot go on with junior officials engaging consensus, engaging state agents and so on that. That's what has caused a lot of wasteful expenditure in the department. We're correcting that, Chair. Chair, may I just make this one other comment? I know I wish I could have answered for the greater part of what was raised earlier on, but I know it happened earlier on. What the DG didn't do is that we actually, the problem was you could have noticed that acting this, acting that. Even a person who was here for was acting as a DG, a COVID support services. So you had this combination in one person leaves, so you have got 2 guests, therefore a corporate support services. We corrected all of that. So at least in that branch, we have got, all the people are working there at that level, a full time. And the person who was at the time acting has been moved from there, was moved by us to deal with the National Produce Service Corps. So we have corrected a lot because we did an analysis and came to the same conclusion that you have come to yourself. Thank you.
Second last question. Development of the state land leasing data system. in 2001, we negotiated with CETA to develop the system, and 5 years later, CETA was dropped for lack of progress, and in 2006, he employed consultants, a cost of over 2 million rand. Development of state land leasing data system. Employed CETA to do that. After 5 years, they didn't make sufficient progress. You then appoint somebody else for 3.5 million rand. Now, my first question is, why did you allow CETA 5 years before you said, no, man, these guys are not doing the work? 5 years. Why not after 6 months, 7 months? They should have been progress reports, pipelines, and it should have been quite apparent within a few months that CETA is capable of doing the work. Why wait for 5 years before terminating the agreement with them? Number one. And number two, you then appoint consultants of 3.5 million. The added costs, various costs of 1.8 million, bringing total expenditure to well over 5 million for the project, and then you abandon it. After all this time, 5 years of CETA, years of this consultant, 5 million rand expenditure, you then abandon the whole thing. Just not again wasteful and fruitless. Have you been able to hold anybody accountable for this?
Captain, the analysis looking at this environment is that at the time, the Department of Land Affairs did not invest in this area of ICT. In other words, we did not have capacity in the ICT environment within the department itself. So that you have people who are capable of managing the environment, who are capable of saying these are the requirements of the time, this is the infrastructure that we need at the time. The unit was at a very, very low level. At some point it was the director that was managing this particular environment. There wasn't capacity in-house in the department itself to manage this environment. Hence, you will see that CETA was there for quite some time, for a long time actually, and then subsequently, another consultant was brought on board.
Who was that consultant?
Name of the consultant was AfriGIS. They were developing the safe land system.
So where are we with the system now? Do you have this ICT capacity now?
I thought the DG was moving towards. Now why did they then have to abandon it after all the money?
This was after realizing that we were not getting closer to the kind of system that we needed. We were trying to respond through the development of the system. We were trying to respond to a challenge where the department is a custodian of land. You have users of this land, and the department has got to enter into legal contracts with them in the form of leases. We have had an obligation to collect rental from the use of this land. But we were not getting to where we ought to have been. And that was the reason why the decision was then later taken. We were trying to fix a very serious problem at the time that we needed to resolve. And there has been also, at some time, a negative adverse audit finding around the inability of the department insofar as the debtors' lease environment, where we did not do proper records, we did not collect rental. That is what we are trying to fix. But it was only after the realization that we were not making progress that then the department took the decision to terminate this and then to start looking at different way of doing this exercise. And I will ask the CFO to explain what has been done. But what we have done since then is that we have begun to invest money in the ICT environment, in the infrastructure within the department, so that our systems are capable of managing this. The minister has approved a structure for this whole city, ICT environment. The chief information officer has been appointed. He is in place. There are about 5 new senior managers in that environment. There are other people at lower levels in this particular area, and we are bringing in intern to try and beef up the capacity in that particular area to make sure that we manage.
That sounds very, very well. But the issue that always happens is, how did this logic escape the department all along?
I think so, it's technical fine.
Those are the normal things that you need.
I sat on for 5 years.
Why was this awareness not there? We need this thing.
I mean, if you look at page 27, the plan was developed, but there was no information technology infrastructure.
I mean, I'm trying to understand the rationale, the thinking, the sense of responsibility, duty. How do these things happen? It's fine, they're there now, putting them out, but why were they not spread out like from the beginning? Because those are basic things that should be there.
At least I'm very pleased that the DG is taking responsibility. He's not sitting there like so many others do, and saying, I wasn't there. At least he's taking institutional responsibility for things that happened some time ago. Chair, I'm almost complete. I just wanted to, looking at a page I referred to earlier on, page 162, which gives a full list of the consultants. Well, I don't know if it does give a full list. It's 162 of the annual report. It's a full list. I don't know if it is a full list. I would love to go item by item, because there are some very strange items there. Plants and flowers and other decorations. Entertainment, interior decorators. We won't go there now. What I do find odd about that long list is you just refer to IDT. And in the AG's report, on page 75 in his graph, he has an indication there of external computer service providers. But on that long list, on page 162, I find no reference to computer service providers. I can't find no reference to ICT there. Are you still not sure you are still employed consultants in that field of general field of ICT? If you are, why do they not feature on this list on page 162? Because if you are using them, that will be added there, so you can get a correct figure of what the total amount is that you're spending on consultants. I strongly suspect that if they are not there, you add them there, it will take us about the half a billion rand that you have spent on consultants over last year. So, why do computers and ICT not feature on that list? Or are they disguised there under some other name? That's my final question.
Thanks, President. The computer services through CISA and external computer services are classified as different in terms of the reporting framework. They are included in the annual report, and I'm just checking the note.
Page 162.
I think it's note number 10.2 on the annual financial statement. So in terms of the accounting reporting framework, the computer services external and the one through CISA are disclosed separately.
But they are consultants.
But
they are consultants, therefore they should be on this list. I've seen that, what is the figure on that 7.1? The graphic or whatever it is, must add to this one. Because this is a comprehensive and full list of consultants. It must be so. You can't exclude things and put them in other parts of your report. We want a full list. So whatever that amount is, I think it's 20 odd million rand, if I'm not mistaken, we will add to that list, which will bring your use of consultants to balloon, that are ballooning over the last financial year, to well over half a billion. Chair, thank you.
All right. What is the figure? And to write it down on page 52.
In 2012, the computer services was under 150 million. 115. It's on page 71 of the annual report.
Close across the use of consultants by almost a third.
Page 71 of the annual report.
So page 162 is misleading. It is misleading. You must increase that by almost a third.
It's not comprehensive.
Okay, it's not misleading then. It's not comprehensive. Okay.
That will have to fix with personal treasury, because that's the working framework. We have disclosed it. It's on the annual financial statement. I agree with the principle that, considering that we are using external people, it is part of consulting. But in terms of the reporting framework, it's not classified under the Table 14. Hence, the Table 14 balance is not number 5.3 on the annual financial statement.
All right.
Thanks, Professor. Page 78, information and communication technology support services. So, we were informed that on the 15th August, a consultant was appointed for 24 months at a contract value of 27.2 million. The interest there is, was there any analysis of the cost of appointing permanent staff versus the benefit associate of the consultant? Thank you.
Chairperson, with respect, we'll ask the Honourable Toby Tenner to repeat the question.
I would repeat, Chair, on condition, I get reasons why I have to repeat. If I'm not audible, let them say so. And if they were not concentrating, let them say so.
No, we I heard the phrase to the question, but the actual question, and he's referring to interest, and that's where I got lost. Hence, I'm respectfully requesting the question to be repeated.
Thank you. My question is, was there any analysis of the cost in departmental staff members to become, you know, responsible for that particular responsibility compared to, you know, a consultant? Was there any analysis of the cost?
Honourable Chair, no, there wasn't. As we have said with the others.
No, it's fine. There was no cost-benefit analysis done.
I would gladly want to know the reason why. I heard earlier the minister has to assist in answering, but I would want to hear. These are two different, you know, issues, not the same. So the same response received from the minister cannot be used as the same answer for this information and communication technology.
As I said earlier on, I think this was an oversight on the part of management.
Thank you. And I'm sure you know that oversight can only be played by us. You don't have to tell us about oversight. Tell us about the negligence, the election of responsibility. That's what the PFMA says to you. Tell us about the correct usage of terms.
All right. I will be in host. First is the leadership of the department neglected its responsibility.
You are putting it in their mouth. Let them say it. I want to hear from them. They are the one who are supposed to have been done there. Can you tell them? I'm not you know, intend to anticipate and presume what you had in your mind. I wanted you to read.
Chairperson, what the honorable member is asking is what should have been done. And we are saying it was not done. But had it been done, there could have been a different response to this. So this is what management should have done. I concede to that.
If that has to be considered, as you say, what has happened to whoever was the supporting part of the management that made you to take proper and accurate decisions?
I think if you look at the time at which some of these things happened, we reported earlier on that the team that was also in managing this particular environment, most of those people have left. What has subsequently happened is a proper organizational design to better manage this particular environment, with a new structure of the organization having been approved, new management team who are now within the department that are working to better manage this environment. The amount of money that has also been spent, the condition was we've got to move away from relying perpetually on consultants in this particular environment. Those are very strict instructions to the chief information officer of the department. Hence he said, fine, I will give you a plan on how I'm going to turn this thing around, and I need resources for it. And he said, bring a plan. And we have established what we call an ICT concept committee chaired by the deputy minister that oversees the change that is required and the implementation of that ICT strategy that was developed. Those are the corrective measures we have since taken since last year.
Chair, I want to believe that Section 38 of the PFMA empowered the DD to take a particular responsibility when things are not, you know, happened as expected to have been happened. And that for that matter, it won't help, DG, for you to generalize your explanation. Here we are dealing with a specific unit headed by a particular person. For you to say, many have already, you know, left the department, it's not the response that one is expecting. I would want to hear that in that particular time, the person who was leading this particular unit, it's the Honorable Torijan, and as we are talking, it's shifted 2 miles away from where he was supposed to. It is what we have done to this particular person, not generalized.
Thank you, Chairperson. None of these individuals are in the department anymore.
By chance, do you know where as we are talking, are they within the state? Okay.
Chairperson, I'm afraid I didn't know. I didn't follow where they were going.
Because to you, there was no offense they committed to you. That's why you didn't even care whether they are leaving the system, they are leaving the country. You don't care.
I do care, Chairperson. Hence, I made sure that, one, the department does have an ICT strategy, that when the new CIO in the department.
I'm talking about the whereabouts of these people. You did not want to know where are they going after they've, you know, painted your department in the manner they've done. Can I then move forward, because they are going to worsen your situation. Your failure to deal with a soft spot, it's going to aggravate the situation. Because going down just a bullet after that, it's saying to you, the very same officials who you can't even account about account whereabouts as of today, they've subsequently made you to pay 3.2 million without having, you know, detailed objective responsibilities and deliverables that were supposed to be paid for in that particular project. Why? I'm sure you can see now that it is aggravating the situation instead of making it better. You were supposed to dictate that environment by having, you know, a clear understanding of the whereabouts of them, what happened to them. But failure to, then it elevates the problem.
Thank you, Chair. This is consistent with the general weakness in the governance, in the project management of this particular area in the department. As we acknowledged it with the human resources management, the contract around the human resources management, the evaluation, this area is no different. That there was general weakness, there was lack of capacity, there was poor governance, there was poor project management. That is what resulted to this. I think the bottom line here is, like you said when you opened this meeting, so as the Honorable Anslick, that there's nothing wrong with the usage of, you know, consultants on the basis of, you know, that you might have done the cost analysis and so on and so forth. But the key, over and above that, even if there might be genuine reasons for you to do that, you still have to perform the monitoring and making sure that you place oversight over this consultant. You can't just give them and off you go. Whether they do or they don't do, you don't care. All you do is once you see an invoice look like having their name on top, you just pay. Is that how we should run the governance?
Definitely not.
I'm sure. Yes, it's a serious worrying deficiency that needs to be addressed, and we cannot. We cannot sit here and having reputable individuals like yourself who are unable to deal with areas that are seriously required an urgent attention from your accounting officers when things of this nature happen. I just say that should be, you know, highlighted and you know, taken up so that everybody could see that here there is a deficiency that it's really not acceptable. Let's go beyond that, and you'll see that as long as we are failing one step, things are getting worse. You know, they don't get better, they get worse. The sooner you grant with the first question, the better for everything that will follow. How do we arrive at the extension of the contract? Not just extension, but this extension goes beyond the required, you know, principles. Amongst other, you should have been here sitting and telling us that the contractual deliverable obligation has been met, but there's no indication whatsoever in this regard to say from the principal 27.2 million contract that you awarded to this person for a period of 2 years, and you added additional 2 years. On top of that, now you have also added the amount to be paid to them by something like 67% of the original contract. What were the reasons for you to extend this without looking at the principles that you were supposed to do?
Jefferson, this is the point. If for a long period of time, you rely on consultants to do the core business in that particular environment of ICT. Even when the contract comes to an end, you are unable to do that because you did not build your own internal capacity. So in a sense, you become beholden to them because if they walk away, the systems are shutting down. So the department became beholden to the people that were operating in that environment, to a point where it could not just simply terminate existing contracts without the department suffering.
Who are these people? Who are these consultants?
They were different. They were current consultants during the period. I think they started with HR Computec, and then they contract was extended, it was extended to CISA IT.
I want to dispute the response we are getting here. it cannot be assets don't talk general. Speak to specific issues. You will receive this report, for argument's sake, 2 days before. Let them have given to you this report on Friday. You should by now knowing what specifically is this particular matter. Don't tell us about there were 4,000 other. We are not interested in that. We are interested in this one.
That's the one I'm talking about, the IT support. It started with HR contract. When the contract was extended, there was another service provider appointed called CIS.
I want to believe, Chair, then for the lady before us did not read the report. The big report talk about one consultancy in this area we are talking about. Today, after the 2 years contract lapse, it was extended. It cannot be extended if you are referring to somebody. It should be appointed another one. Here we are talking about one, Chair. Can we get it clear? If you know, say I know it's this and that. If I don't know, you don't know.
I know that the contract was a period from 2006 to 2010. And HR Computer was the service provider at that particular time.
Now, this thing, the initial contract was for 2006 to 2008, and extended from 2008 to 2010. That's why I'm saying, talk about what. Don't mix water and oil here. Okay?
All right. No, fine.
So, what were the reasons then for not following the procurement procedure? Doing that, I've heard the DG that it has been, you know, one of the weaknesses of the department that we relied solely on the consultancy for IT and what have you. But the question here is this one, you were not supposed to terminate. It went until it completes its contractual period and it gets lapsed. And that particular period towards the, you know, the lapsing of the 2 years period, you were supposed to have been doing a plan to say, now they are about to conclude, what do we do? It looks like, besides relying on them as, you know, the sole provider of IT in the department, you equally seem to do what you were supposed to have done. And I can argue further to say, it means you have arrived at this particular short decision, precisely because there was inadequate planning leading to the appointment of this consultant. Can you prove me different?
I think, Chair, we shouldn't create the impression that these two people were responsible for this. They said them not before their time. So I think in all fairness, the honorable members are helping me here. But the context must be very clear here, so that we don't chop the heads of somebody for nothing. She wasn't even part of the department at the time. He was still a DDG. I think I really would like to appear. So that we if we say, what have you done now as a lesson from this failure? Let's talk to that. We want to be helped too. Thank you.
Yeah, I think, Commerce Minister, the...
This is for you, Chef. I understand the issue of their responsibility. I take two. I take that. That's why I'm speaking now.
Yeah. No, I wanted to say we deal with it institutionally, not personally. Not individual. So they are the face of the department. So when we ask questions looking at them as individuals, we were very clear that it might be. Actually, I was about to say, you know, Hush, the issues that you are raising expose to us the serious challenges of short-termism within the public service. Because as Hush is asking, the person who must explain why at that particular point he or she took that particular decision, if that person is not sitting in front of us, it becomes a futile exercise. And it frustrates us, and it might as well be that at our level, oversight becomes almost meaningless, because if you are going to be faced with new people who cannot justify decisions taken, then you can't do scope or work, because we are dealing with what kills the patient. The first one, doing an autopsy. Things that happened. Why did they happen? What was the rationale? What was the basis for particular decisions to be taken or not taken? So, yes, there is an institutional element, but at the end of the day, there are certain decisions that boil down to an individual where you have to make a decision as a manager. That I do this or I don't do this.
Let me take responsibility on that. Partly why some of the people who were responsible for this are not there. Because exactly the points we're talking about. I must take responsibility now. I actually removed three people there because of this point we're talking about. Because I had a problem doing exactly this with these guys. You know, because every time there were no 50 there, and those people at the top, they're not there now. We moved them. You know this thing. You had the DG there, you had the DG, Chief Land Claims Commissioner. When we came to this responsibility, they couldn't answer the questions. And they were responsible. We moved them. They're not there. We put in these people in their place now, of course, including the CFO. We don't have a CFO yet. But the point I'm making is that institutionally we did take responsibility. But all I'm saying is let's not hang those people who, because of the technical fact that there's an institutional responsibility, I think there's going to be now.
All right. Okay. Dr. George, do you want to, before I go back to Jorge?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to say it's good to see the Minister here because the Minister don't always take us seriously as they should, so thank you, Minister, for being here. But I do want to ask a question to the Minister now that he's raised this issue about accountability, specifically institutional accountability. It's very clear from the conversation that's gone on is that this department is seriously broken in terms of public financial management, and maybe it is getting better, that remains to be seen. But the fact that we find it like is today, the way it is today, and yes, there are people that are gone. But I want to ask the Minister, who is responsible for the mess we find today? Thank you, Chairperson.
All right, can you do this, Comrade Minister? Let's park Dr. George's question. When Hoshi finishes, if Dr. George is coming, maybe in context of the issues that is going to raise from the annual report, we can model that question back.
Thanks, sir. Maybe because this page 78, item 5, it looks like it has twisted the whole approach. Let me jump it and go to 6 deliberately, sir.
Okay.
Deliberately, so.
All right.
And as this picture, we are informed, DG, that an amount of 1.4 million was used to establish a project management office. In that process, a subsequent bulletin 106.1 were observed. The first one is maybe you can do in a quick synopsis, running and preparing to us going beyond. What was the rationale behind the appointment of a bigger requesting 580 per hour compared to the one of 500? And in between, Chair, knowing that CETA's recommended rates were at 520, what was the rationale? I do know, Chair, that in some instances, because I work with this, you know, consultancy sometimes back, that some of the consultancy...
You work with them?
Yes, I've been a consultancy for coming years. Don't thought I'm just a new person in between that. I know what I'm talking about. There are those who can build and some suck. You said, come and build an office of this nature. And this person said, I can build this office with 50,000. And only to know that when you do the planning, you know this office required something like 1.2 million. So you can't have this 15% if you know your work. But I would want to hear from you. Despite the rating of 520, somebody bidded for 500, you opted for 580. What was the rationale? With the clear understanding. When you talk, you should know that I understand everything that can be said.
You worked in that field. I see.
I'm looking at the number 6 and number 7. And I see them leading us back to where we were with the minister. I'm not sure how we want us to handle this. Because I think what you want and what we want here is somebody to explain and justify why certain decisions were taken and why certain decisions were not taken. And I think that is what is going to handle the remaining area of focus. Yes. Now, I'm thinking about this in terms of how we handle this as a department and you as an individual in terms of rationalizing and explaining these obviously wrong processes and management of this project. I want to try that generic question and hear you out and then go back to Hosh. Because like I said, my exasperation is it will take us back to the same position. I've moved in. I've not found documentation that explains and justifies why certain decisions were taken. And so, as a manager in place currently, this is what I think. This is how I see it. Either you agree with it or disagree with it. In terms of these processes, they were right or they were wrong. But somebody else put a signature there at some point that this should happen. I'm not sure if I'm clear. I'm saying if you look at number 6 and number 7, Hoshi's line, which is of course all of us line, it's how do we explain these deficiencies? How do we justify these processes that happened? I'm trying to check with you if we have a way of responding to that kind of a generic question. Then I'll go back to Jose. If you understand, if you get my point. Try, I'll check if you got me well or not, and then I'll go back to Jose.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think with a report of this nature, its findings, sitting and looking at this report, discussing it, trying to establish what could have been the reason and why certain things were done in a particular way. I think we have come to a conclusion, all of us, that certain things were done wrongly. They were not done in the manner, certain things were not done in the manner they ought to have been done. And that this report, for us to move forward, it requires that we look at each one of these particular areas, even where we have come up with a plan. For instance, even if you were to go back to the ICT environment, we have put a whole range of mechanisms in place. But I think our big challenge is not to then sit and relax and say, we now have the OCIO with management and the governance structure. We've got to find a way of continuously managing the work that happens in that environment and not take our eyes off what happened there.
Okay, that's fine.
Let me
go back to Sir. I hope you understand my frustration.
No, I do, yeah. Which is not necessarily a frustration. I want to check. The minister said most of officials who committed this misfortunate kind of management in the departments are no longer there. Things are good, but it's not enough, Chair. When things of this nature, of the magnitude that we are talking about, are you know, found and then observed, and lead to that decisive decisions of, you know, changing the department, it should be coupled with the, what the law said. Because the law then said, if there is a suspicious conduct of a particular officials or whatever, required to be investigated. And to me, if we don't investigate this kind of issue, then we will never investigate the things that are very serious. I'm doing this, Chair, because the very same consultant that was used for project management office, look what they do. They've been appointed on a particular understanding with a specific amount of money. And they said, so the department said, we need an additional manpower. You alone are not enough. Then they themselves, again, the department gave them the mandate to go and look for additional consultants. They went back to their own consultancy and said, now we are multiplicating ourselves. We are dividing ourselves into enough capacity that initially we did not show to have. They employed themselves again on top. The contract that was supposed to be at 1.4, it ends up coming at 5.8. That they hired themselves in the process at about the same cost that they did and said we can do the job. Then you thought, but the job is not effective, you are not doing well. They went back and get themselves employed themselves again. I would suggest that the decisions of the minister, I applauded it, but it's not enough. Let's go and get the investigating, institution to investigate this thing and walk straight to the police station, ED, open a case once you've got prima facie evidence of this kind of thing. So this thing that damaging the image of our newborn democratic, dispensation in South Africa. We can't, forever nurse and then continue saying, no, it's good we are having plans. But let's correct them so that even in the future people should know that not in this country where you can do things of this nature.
Yeah, I think, Comrade Minister, I'm sure you understand the situation. And that's why I wanted us to maybe, conclude. Because if you go through each of these items, you will come to the same point, which is that the DG sitting there would say, I agree, these things were wrong. And we'll not be able to hold an individual responsible. Yes, there's institutional accountability, but the institution is under individuals, given certain positions, powers, and responsibilities. And what Coach is saying is that, when we talk about this element of impunity, that's where it comes in. Yes, the people who were there have been removed as a punishment for wrongdoing. But in terms of the law, was that enough? And I think our point is no, it is not enough. More measures, punitive measures would have been taken against people who acted the way they did. And if you read through some of these things, I mean, it's like it was just anarchy. People could just do as they pleased without any jury to legislation and policy. I think that is what is coming out very strongly. How did these things happen? Those people were there, the political leadership and the administrative leadership. Where did they come from? Were they South Africans? Were they patriotic? Were they skilled?
they have the interest of the state at heart in all the things that they were doing and the decisions that they were taking. I think those are the questions that arise. And if you don't have those people in front of us, then whatever emotions we are showing, just hot air. Meaning therefore that the exercise is pointless. Because when the DG has left, in 5 years' time, when the AG goes and does another performance audit, we'll bring out other things. And then the DG will not be there. There will be somebody else. So I think that's the frustration we're getting, not only with this department, but because we get this over and over and over again. So I think the point here is that they would want that when people have not followed the letter of the law, we indeed must be seen to be active. But equally, we need to have people who are given positions of responsibility to run their institutions in a way that suggests that it was not a mistake to have appointed them. They knew why they were appointed, they had a commitment to their job, and did the fundamentals right. I'm not sure, DG or Minister, there's anything we want to say before we pass to the next item. But certainly, this report does not make good reading in terms of how the department managed outsourced services, which allowed these companies to just do as yes. 1 minute. I'll give you, but I want us to move to the annual report. Yes.
Chairperson, thank you. I just want to make a tell myself that I'll make this comment every day when I'm meeting in terms of the hearings of this public or performance. To say, Chair, it's a matter that we raised last week when we were meeting with the two departments, like the frustrations that you are saying and the outcomes of this hearing. To still say, Chairperson, to insist that after this hearing, I think as a committee still need to sit down and find a way, if we can't track some of these people who have committed this unfortunate behavior that we're busy with here. Because really, it really doesn't help. Sometimes we feel frustrated as a member when we are busy engaging the department, only to find that the person who was busy on this implementation of this very decision that we are having is no longer in the department, or else the consultant is nowhere to be found. And really, we find ourselves wanting as a committee whether what is it that we are doing? Is it proper or is it for the benefit or is it value? Does it add value to us as a committee, as the watchdog of the public purse or not? To check if the method we are pursuing, does it give benefit to the state? Does it add value? I think we still need, I'll still urge the person that after this hearing of all these consultants, we still need to sit down and as a committee, if we can track some of these people. Fortunately, some of them, they are still in other departments. Then we can call them.
All right. Even tomorrow, remind us, I will give you the time to make that. But maybe we need to go back and look at all these. Remember last week, we had this one big company that had all these fraudulent things about getting a partner in and this, that. So we need to check how many of these consultants we have and call them to come in, because anyway they got public money. Can we pass TG, Comrade Minister?
Sir, for me to thank the committee chair once more. I know you said you're frustrated. You can imagine how frustrating it is for an individual. I called it the Titanic. And if there's anything I thank you for, is help me turn the Titanic around. Thank you very much.
Okay. Dr. George?
Thank you, Chairperson. Given that we've been talking about consultants, I thought I'd start on page 162 of the annual financial statement report. On page 162, there is a list of consultants. Now, I don't want to belabor the point, but I just want to ask one question only. There is an item, stage and sound crew. for 511,000 rand. What is that for? Thank you.
Can you repeat that item? Is it stage and what?
Stage and sound crew. It is 511. Page 162. It's sort of wrapped, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 12 from the bottom. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. From time to time, the department hosts different events on our comprehensive rural development sites across the country. We go, we visit the sites. Sometimes the number of people that are involved in those events, they range from a very small number of people, sometimes to thousands of people. We have had an event with about 20,000 people attending. So you would need to have a proper sound system to be audible when you engage with those people.
Okay.
That's what it is used for.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd want to start with the acting CFO. Now, I understand Masingo has been in place as acting CEO since August 2011. That's a year and a half now. Why is Masingo still acting?
Why is she still acting a year and a half down the line?
Chair, you are correct referring it to me because I took the decision.
Okay.
There was a audit. I wanted the chartered accountant. We got the list. The chartered accountant guy, gentleman, who worked for I think Furlen, that's one of the metros in Gauteng. We wanted that gentleman. He put out of him. He withdrew. After we had the shortlisting, we called for interviews. And I've given them 2 weeks ago 21 days to run that the charter of the company.
Are you saying that the person who is doing the job at the moment is not qualified to do it?
To the extent that we're looking for the charter of the company, she's not one. She's good, but she's not what we're looking for.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to just then go quickly to the report of the accounting officer on page 44. And I would make a reference earlier to the system. Now, Chairperson, as you know, I mean, it really is pointless for us to get all hot and bothered in the committee because, you know, what's the point? So what? The system is broken and needs to be fixed. And that's what we need to focus on. So on page 44, under number 14, it says Standing Committee on Public Accounts Resolution Scope. Now, according to this report, which is from the accounting officer, it says there were no resolutions from SCOPA. Now, SCOPA did see this department before. I understand that there was, in fact, resolutions, because when we had a briefing from the Auditor General, there were a number of items. And the only thing that it says here at SCOPA is that this information technology system was being addressed. But there were some other items, like, for example, investigations that were still in process and disciplinary action that had not yet been taken because it was building capacity in the labor relations unit. So I'm just wondering, maybe don't belabor the whole point, but if the department did not receive any data and there was in fact something, the nexus is broken, but I want to ask the department, did you not get a report or something from SCOPA regarding resolutions? Thank you.
We did, Honorable Chair, and the committee made, on the basis of the discussion and the annual report presented by the Auditor General, the committee made several recommendations to the department for implementation.
I think you want you to resolve the apparent contradiction between the first sentence and the last sentence. Well, the first sentence says there was no resolution, but the last sentence says the committee was concerned about just
one item, and these are being addressed.
President, when the annual report was being issued, we had not yet received the official resolution from SCOPA. We received it in May 21st when we were finalizing the audit.
So what was the basis of that?
So this one was relating to the 2010-11 financial year. It was normally on this paragraph, in terms of the reporting framework, we report in relation to the previous financial year. When we were busy with the report, we had just appeared through SCOPA for the previous financial year, and those concerns that were raised by the committee that are continuous, we had then also taken into account, although we had not received a formal resolution from SCOPA.
I mean, you are reducing that very important and key paragraph of the disclosure requirement, you know, to an almost afterthought, because for us, that paragraph is the key instrument by which our resolutions and recommendations cannot be thrown into the dustbin, because National Treasury expects you, as part of the disclosure requirement, to indicate what resolution came from the committee. So we have expected that you should have indicated all the decisions and all the recommendations, and on the other side indicate what you're doing to each one. That would have been useful to a reader who is not sitting here, but to merely put on a one-liner like that, it's almost like an afterthought, a hurried, you know, inclusion. That is wrong, very, very wrong. George?
Thank you, Davidson. I could not have put it there myself, so thank you very much. On page number 37, there's a report from the Audit Committee. Now, keep saying this at every meeting in the department that when the departments come before us, public finance is not actually that difficult. You have to have financial procedures that are in place and properly managed. You need to have an internal audit department that is functional, produce those reports, and then send those reports off to the Audit Committee, which looks at those reports, and then corrective action is taken so that by the time the Auditor General has a look at the financials, they're in a state that, you know, are readable, manageable, etc. You don't have to restate, etc. So those three pillars are actually very fundamental, but they're quite simple disciplines to have in place. Now, what this report says for the Audit Committee, which is obviously the committee that now looks at these internal reports, it says that the system of internal control was not entirely effective for the year under review. Now, I know that the CEO is underqualified and was only in place for 6 months of the year. But why is that the case? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the point that is being made is an indication that indeed the system is not yet fully matured. It is not yet at a level at which it ought to be. It is continuously improving. There is no doubt about that, Chairperson. Even if you were to look backward years, you would see gradually there is improvement in every one of the areas that we're talking about within internal and control environment. But it is not perfect. That is the point that the Chairperson. I think it would be dishonest if we said here that our systems are foolproof and they were fully developed. They are not.
Okay. Thank you very much,
David. At a very huge cost. I mean, if you go to page 152, the amount you spend for your internal auditors, $34 million. Do we need double that amount to have a foolproof system? $34 million, and we still do not have the watertight, a foolproof system. Why are we outsourcing the services?
Chairperson, again, when we started with your question is in relation to the internal audit function, while Dr. George, but why are our systems not fully tracking?
That related?
Yeah.
I mean, why are they not fully functional after paying $34 million? And for that to approach professionals.
With regard to the internal audit function, it is well established function. Again, it is one of those functions in the department which was not well capacitated. For a department that has got a budget of the size, it has got for a long internal audit was led by a director. It did not have all the full functions of internal audit. We reported in the last year, chapter 6, that we have upgraded the unit to build internal capacity. We believe that as we continue to build internal capacity, we are going to reduce, not eliminate completely, reduce, hopefully substantially, the outsourcing of some of the work that we're doing at internal audit. We cannot completely eliminate it, because some of the things that we're going to do from time to time do need well-established teams of forensic experts and the like to assist the department. But certainly, we are building that particular capacity within the department.
What was the amount spent, before I come to you, what was the amount spent in the 2011 financial year on outsourced internal audit function?
Yeah, we'll confirm it with you now.
Okay, Dr. George.
Thank you, Jason. While we are on the issue of the internal audit of the 34 million rand, it would maybe be useful for us as a committee chairs, and you've mentioned that there are consultants out there that are not doing what they're supposed to do. I would be very interested to know who these consultants were, maybe not for the purposes of this meeting, but, you know, subsequently, who the consultants are and what did they actually do, because we're not seeing it in the results. And then I want to move to
okay. I think that's a straightforward question that can be answered now. Who are the consultants? What exactly do they do? In tandem with your own staff of internal auditor.
Okay. Jason, we'll come back with...
don't know who the consultants are.
No. They are using a consortium made up of CWC and other small firms. They currently do all the internal audit work. With the increase in capacity now...
And what do the people they have hired do if they want to do all the internal audit work?
Previously, there was no capacity. The internal audit was at a directorate level, which has been elevated now to a chief directorate level. There are two senior managers that have been appointed recently, the senior managers to do IT audit. So in that area, most of the work is done internally. So it's a cost of putting arrangement as they are building capacity within the unit. And then the other one is a director for forensic audit. They're building capacity in that area, so this is senior manager, they're responsible. So only certain portion is being outsourced.
Dr. George.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Dr. Johnny says that he was a consultant, and maybe he can advise us at the point where the 34 million rand seems like a reasonable number for what we got, it seems. But I think, Chairperson, I think, you know, as we were talking about, that it's a two-way street, you know, and that is the private sector and the public sector working together on certain things. And here we have consultants who clearly haven't done what they're supposed to do. 34 million rand was spent. The audit committee said that the system isn't working properly. So clearly the money, we didn't get value for money. I think, Chairperson, we should identify who the consortium is, led by PricewaterhouseCoopers, if that's the people. We must call them to this committee chairperson, and we must ask them. They must show us and tell us what they have done. And if they haven't done it, they must give the money back to people. Because the people, it's the people's money. It's not money to be wasted. Okay. Page 47.
Right. Will Paul just note that part. We want to get the information about the consortium that's dealing with internal audit. And would also want to get the capacity that you have, the structure of the internal audit and the people who are employed there. So we know to have 2 people, to have 7 people, but also to know how many people in terms of structure do you need. Do you need 70 and you only have 15? And what is the plan to get the remaining 55, if that is the case, so that we have a sense. We don't have it in broad and generic terms, but we cannot understand that much. Dr. George?
Thank you, Chairperson. I look forward to questioning them on what they did with the people's money when they come. On page 47, here is a paragraph which is talking about claims against the department. Now, it's just over 2 billion rand. Now, I understand that these are court cases that the department might very well win. But in the event that they do not win, there should be, I believe, a contingent liability of some kind in financials to make, you know, provision for that. My understanding is that that is not the case. Could you clarify it?
The 2 billion is actually the contingent liability, because those are the metals that are in court that depends on the outcome of court.
It says in this report here on page 47, as a result, no provision for any liability.
Which paragraph?
On page 47,
yeah.
Under number 9.
Number 9, oh,
okay. There's significant uncertainties. Now, if it were a contingent liability, which is a contingent liability, one would expect that you would make provision, as you said. But this report is telling me, I may be reading it wrong, but I don't think so. Because it says that their claim amounted to 2 billion rand. And then it says the ultimate outcome cannot be determined at present, as the final decision might be in favor or against the department. Yes, that is obvious. That's how the law works. And then it says, as a result, no provision for any liability, including legal costs, that may result, has been made in the financial statements. Now, I think that that is reckless accounting, because in the event that you lose and you have to pay legal fees and interest costs like you had before, because this is not the first time that the department has, may lose a court case, and it does not make sense to me. Thank you.
Thanks, President. The note must be read with note number 20.
Note number 20.
Note number 20.
It's on which page?
It's on page 27.
You have to talk to note 20.
Yes. What we were trying to explain on note number 20 was that in this 2.4 million, we only disclose the capital amount, because the court can decide in terms of interest and legal cost is unknown at that point. So we just disclose it for the users to say the capital amount of the money that has been taken.
All right. No, I think I get the point. The liability that has been provided for is on interest and legal cost.
Thank you. I get it.
Okay.
I do think, however, that it is possible, and maybe it would be more simple, to make some kind of provision, because we have seen in the past that there were costs that were incurred. But anyway, that's a discussion for a different time. Thank you. You have clarified my question. Then on number 10, where there is a discussion on verified claims, and there's an amount of approximately 790 million. I do want to ask at this point about a contingent liability that might arise going forward. Is that there has been discussion about claims pre-1913. Now, if something arises there, is the department going to, or has the department made any provision for that, or is that something you will worry about when the time comes?
Minister, including those who lost their land after 1913, but missed December 1998, as a hypothetical question.
It's both hypothetical and political.
Okay.
This future, the Honorable George is asking a question on something that is not before him. So I'm not in the position to answer the question, because it's a political question. But if you force me to do so, I will comply. I'm with you.
Well, proceed, Comrade Minister, and respond to this. I think it arises precisely from point number 10 on 47. Currently, we're dealing with what we have. If these possibilities arise, unfortunately, Dr. George is a politician. So we will have a political question.
To answer that. Sure. Chair, we have before the nation, as placed before Parliament by the President of the country, that insofar as 1913-87 Act is concerned, which is a cut-off date for lodgement of claims, the President said, he mentioned three aspects of this exception. One, heritage site; two, historical landmark; three, the descendants of the Khoi site. Now, I have put together a team of lawyers to look at the Constitution in terms of Section 25(3) and in particular Section 25(7). And when we are ready, we're going to go before Parliament and then deal with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to ask then also on under the same heading, number 11, about municipal rates on properties of the department. Now, I'm not understanding something here. My understanding is that it's clear whether you have to pay it or not. I understand that if you've got a property and you incur a municipal account, it has to be paid. What is confusion here? Thank you.
Thank you, President. In relation to municipal rates, we depend on municipalities to bill. Now, majority of municipalities are incapacitated. They've not done even evaluation of. So we were just showing that by virtue of us owning properties, there are possibilities of us owing some municipal rates somewhere, which we depend on municipalities to bill. We are engaging with SALGA and the municipality boards in different provinces to try and identify if they have done the wrong and we are liable for the same. So it is an accounting requirement.
All right. Thank you, Chairman. So the answer to the question is, in my mind, is that there has to be some kind of liability that will arise when the municipality does at some point do something about the billing. But you don't know what the number is. Okay, thank you. And then finally, on page 48 and page 49, I want to take them together. Number 16 and 20 regarding the targets for the department. Now, there were a number of targets that were set by the department. There was concern that the targets were too vague. So maybe that's the first part of our question. Why were the targets vague?
It was not a deliberate decision on the part of the department to make the targets of the department vague. This is after engagement with the team from the AG so that the targets of the department and the indicators that we set for ourselves to measure whether the department meets its target. The AG had indicated to us that they have to meet that particular criteria. So they are not set deliberately to be vague. In our view, we thought we had done what was necessary to make sure that we can be measured and do what we said we were going to do. But it was the finding of the Auditor General that they were not clear enough. And we have taken that point with the
AG. They were very clear to you. And yet, to you, they appeared very clear.
Jefferson, we believed they were clear.
Dr. George?
Thanks, Jefferson. Given the vagueness of the target, in any event, there were targets that were set. And 30 targets were achieved. This is number 20 on page 49. This represents 45% of the total planned targets that were not achieved during the year under review. Now, I understand when you say that you didn't intend the targets to be vague, but that wouldn't make sense, I think. But they were in fact. But then when the targets, I'm presuming the targets that were understandable and not vague, they were not met. And why was that?
this, Chairperson, because of the indicators that were not properly defined, as the audit process was progressing, certain indicators could not be verified with more substantive evidence, and we agree to the issue that those charges that were not properly verified, that could not be verified, can be taken out. That is one of the contributions of the low targets, I guess, because those are the ones that they could satisfy themselves that this service has been done satisfactorily and it is supported by appropriate evidence. Some of the projects we had to take it out, even though work was done in terms of some service delivery deliverables, but we had to take it out because it was not reliable evidence supported. So we have since improved on that one in detail.
Thank you. My final question will be, what have you done to make sure that the targets that are now in place and will continue to be in place are actually not laid? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. That's a very important question. What we have done on our side is to ensure that we have within the department a planning team that we work with that makes sure that when we work on the development of our targets and our indicators, they meet the requirements of the Auditor General. We have had a discussion on this. It was our view even initially that we wished even before we could submit, for argument's sake, an ACP to Parliament, we wish the AG could confirm whether or not what we are tabling to Parliament as our target will, in their view, when they audit the department, be measurable indicators, be clear indicators. But obviously they cannot do that before the work is done. So, but we have had that assistance from them to try and engage around those particular issues.
I thought that would be the obvious route to take to engage with the AG's office. Either the planning stage, I don't think it would be a difficult request, so that you agree that these indicators, whatever shortcomings might be there, at least vagueness is no longer part, will not be part of their findings. And as such, eliminate progressively whatever challenges might be there in the auditing of predetermined objectives. Dr. George, are you done?
Thank you, yes, I am.
All right. Let me take Comrade Chilwane and Dr. Rabi before we move to Comrade Mutambi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make a follow-up on in regard with the question on the municipalities levy on page 47. The department has reported that due to the under capabilities of the municipalities, they are unable to verify in terms of the payment of rates. But Chair, I'm just asking myself that out of 283 municipalities that we have in the whole of South Africa, not even one municipality could be able to have their billing system in a correct way. I just want to get clear to that one, so that, because it doesn't confuse. Because even if there's a shortage of capacity in the municipalities, but I don't believe in the total of 283. That could be just zero. I'm not satisfied with that response. Chairperson, just want to
could in the meantime check the Ndwebe. Well, Ndwebe also does not have the capacity to be. Okay.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, in your opening remarks, you said that gender distribution is very, very important. And I think that this particular department is also very important. I think that what was of great concern to me, if I read on page 46 and 47, Chair, the report of the Auditor General, he says in the second paragraph on page 47, although the department did a significant amount of work to correct the misstatements identified in the 5 years modified opinion, the department still did not have adequate systems in place estimate, my entire records for all site land and the removal of tangible capital asset register of the department, which resulted in an incomplete and inaccurate register being maintained. Now my question is, have they set a deadline to get a proper record of all state land? Because I cannot see with respect, and I appreciate the Honourable Minister that is here, that, but how can we function properly if we have an incomplete register? So I'd like to have the views from the Minister or the DG. When do they foresee, when will they be able to have a complete register of all state land? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. The exercise of auditing registered state land, we have received a report. What is remaining is some is verification of just about 111,000 land parcels, which we want to verify correctly so that before they are included in the database, we are very certain about their ownership. We agree that that exercise of verification will be completed by the end of this month.
Okay, good. Can I move on to Mutambi? Yeah. There was a question around municipalities. Is it that all municipalities in the country, not even one, has been able to build the
pattern? No. Our municipalities did us, and we did pay them the money that we owed to them. Hence, we had to disclose those that did not pay us. So it's not all the 283 municipalities that did not pay us.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's fine. I thought the impression that we got in the earlier response seemed to suggest that municipalities are not able to by engaging funds. All right, Kumbet Zambi.
Thank you, Chairperson. So today I'm like my colleague from Limpopo, Honorable, but I'll try to do the consensus. Chair, I'm raising it because since 2009, DG, you'll agree with us. You appeared before this committee in 2009 together with your predecessor. But then you were a DDG, like what the minister has said. So our issue is that this department doesn't have a problem of institutional memory, because then you being a DDG, you'll be elevated to become a DG. Then we understand you have been understanding what's happening in the department. But sitting here together with my colleagues, we are very much worried. Because since the 2008-09 financial year upgrade, the department has never progressed when you come to your annual report. In fact, in other instances, we see some matters being repeated time and again. They remain unattended. The AG is just in the mess they are, and they are just recurring. And in other cases, the matters are even becoming worse. To refresh your mind, you know that 08-09 had a qualified audit opinion. 09-10 it was a qualified audit opinion. 10-11 qualified audit opinion. Even today, or this one that I was sitting on, is a qualified audit opinion. Then the question that comes in, before I start, because these issues are interlinked mainly based on non-compliance. The question that I'm starting to raise, do you really take this committee serious or parliament serious, given all these issues that are happening? That's my first presentation.
Honorable Chair, yes, we do.
Let me refer you to page 49
of the annual report.
Of the annual report. Paragraph 22.
issue of the strategic planning and performance management, following up on your response now. In 2009-10, the AG found a similar provision, the way it's putting it, that it didn't ensure that the department had and maintained an effective, efficient, and transparent system of internal control regarding performance management. That was the finding of the DG, of the AG in 2009-10. The same finding happened in 2010-11. Now we're seated with this report again, the same finding. So if you take us seriously at this committee and you're also serious about your job as prescribed in Section 31A, 1 and B of the Public Finance Management Act, why are we still having instances of this measure?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It is true that there are findings, there are repeat findings in the report that is before the committee that were in the previous two annual reports of departments. That is true. But I think one would have to take each one of those individuals to be able to respond to the question. I think it is correct that there was a qualification on immovable asset for the last three financial years. But I think if we were to drill down to each one of the financial years and look at the causes, it will be evident in each one of the reports that one significant amount of effort was made to correct it, such that if you move to the following year, take 2009-10, for instance, and you compare the results of the same finding in 2010-11, and you compare that again to 11-12, you will find that they have been shifting, they are not consistent. I'm saying the reason for the qualification, which means that in each year there is a finding, there is something that is being done, but some other problem obviously still persists and the AG finds on the particular. So it's not like persistently nothing was done, because the findings themselves on the statement, for instance, will show that there are different efforts that have been made, some of which have been commended by the Auditor General Office for the last two financial years, those particular efforts, Honorable Member. On the management of performance and retaining the system, we have acknowledged the system up front. We it was worse perhaps in 2010-11 as compared to this particular period. You will also see that in the 2012-13 financial year, it will be different in terms of improvement from what it was in the current financial year. But what it means is that the department has made very serious attempts to attend to many of them. We have not been able to completely eradicate all of the weaknesses in our control environment. There were a target that the minister had set for ourselves, in the current financial year and in the 2014 financial year, to say we must strive towards having a clean audit as a department. So that is what we are trying to do. It is not all that we want it to be. It still has weaknesses. But I am saying even if we take the report for the last three financial years, there will be notable improvement. Yes, we may have regressed in some of them, but overall there are areas that have improved, Chairperson. Thank you.
Chairperson, on item 23, we are told of a progress at the same thing now, and this is also linked to what Honorable George has raised, the issue of the EU4. because here you can see that the AG found that the financial statements prepared didn't comply with the requirements of Section 41. This is what also happened in the previous year 2010-11, and again in this financial year. So that progress that the DG is referring, because now, how do you have similar mistakes continuing? Secondly, both the minister has responded to the issue of the vacant position of the CFO, but still, it could have taken us 19 months to recruit a CFO. What is your turnaround time in the recruitment? Because the report that the minister is giving is just of recent developments. Since August 2011, what are we actually doing, DJ? That's my first question on the issue of the financial statement. Secondly, if you look on page 162, under the 62, the one of the consultants, there's an amount of payment to the audit committees of around 494,000. I'm raising this for you to read the report of the audit committee. 162. Paragraph, the issue about consultants. There's been payment to auditors to an amount, auditors and accountants to an amount of 324,000, and then also payment to audit committees of 194. Then I want to take you to page 38 on the report of the audit committee. Page 38, the second paragraph. I will quickly read it for your benefit. It says, the committee were not always satisfied with the content and the quality of quarterly reports prepared and issued by the department in terms of the Public Finance Management Act and presented to the committee during the year under review. Improvement on the quarterly performance reporting, especially the availability of supporting documents to validate the integrity of performance reported, remains essential. You see, my question here comes to saying, you procured services of independent external experts to come and to help you, to assist you. At the end, you disperse the amount of money to pay them. Still, you don't consider their report. Because this person, I also want to send it to the minister to say what was the minister's relationship with the audit committee. It ended with the executive management. Was the minister continually abreast with the findings of the audit committee? Because if indeed the audit committee was functional exercise at the year, and they've noted the issues, the deficiencies, and then they remain unattended. So what is the issue there? I want to understand that.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll answer the one on the annual financial statement. When we submit annual financial statement, I said that the financial statements are accurate and completely valid. But going to 2011, we're in the process of clearing the qualification issue with asset management. And we did a huge adjustment on the annual financial statement based on the restitution purposes that we later identified that they were not accounted for. In line with the accounting principles and the processes, we agreed to make that change when the error was found. We acknowledge that it should not have happened. We should have identified it.
But there's a long list of issues in that paragraph that the AG raised. You know, from operating leases, commitments, cash and bank and accounts, payable, investments, whole of it, not just one particular item.
Yes, I was still talking about the bigger adjustment in annual financial.
Okay.
Is that we had a huge adjustment on the restitution assets. Then the other adjustment that we've done, and I think we are just acknowledging that we need to reach a point where annual financial statements are just complete, and that's it. And the other adjustment that we've done was in relation to the public works lease property, because we account for it in our books. And the lease that we got is all our properties in relation to the public works property was not complete, and we had relied on the report that they provided us to be there. But we realized that some contracts had expired and that we should have engaged with public works earlier on in the process so that we know
beforehand that their report is not accurate. Then same with 2012, we had huge adjustments on
the workers on problem for you to have relied on them to provide accurate information, which they couldn't provide about their own activities. I think it was unfortunate. It shouldn't have happened. Right, let's deal with the report of the audit committee. That paragraph on page 38. They were not satisfied with the content and quality of quarterly reports prepared and issued by the department and presented to the committee. I suppose these are the reports prepared by your internal audit.
What happens is that we had an audit committee which sits very frequently. We used to sit four times a year, once a quarter, where we look at management action plans, quarterly reports we submitted to the audit committee. But as we were engaging, we realized that there were bigger problems because normally when you, within that short period of time, it was a high-level kind of report. But we then, with the recommendation of the audit committee, we developed specialized audit committee meetings where we just focused on the witnesses identified by internal audit and external audit. They were not satisfied with some of the reports that we have provided, more specifically with the comments information, because of the indicators that were not properly defined. And those we, as we engage, we go back and put in our next
forum. If I suppose, and you correct me, your internal audit would prepare a report for the audit committee, isn't it? So the content and quality of the quarterly report, are they related to the report of the internal auditors, to the audit committee, or they relate to something else? I just want that to be clarified to me.
It's related mostly to management reports, not the work done by the internal auditors. Management report on providing progress on the recommendation made by internal auditors.
All right.
That's important.
Okay.
But the question is that the audit committee was not hit by those reports. And then, as we find this data corner, they have raised issues with you. Can you provide us with evidence that you attempted to address the issues that the audit committee was raising with you? Secondly, were those issues ever, if they were beyond your jurisdiction, were they ever escalated with the minister, with the accounting authority?
Yes, Chair. I'm not a finance person, but the reason why I understand a bit of what's going on is because of the help of the committee and the Auditor General's office. I have introduced, I said earlier on, a management information dashboard for the department. It was because of that report, but although I haven't said to them, you're asking now, but it was my own interaction with the chairperson of the committee. Outside of their knowledge. But said part of the problem is that the program manager, and this is the point which we have to correct because it relates directly to what they're saying. The program manager, when those meetings take place, more often than not are not there to provide information that's required. Now, what I did was to simply develop this dashboard, which actually boils down to a project manager. Where is the project happening? Who is providing the service in terms of those consultancy and contractors and so on? But who is the project manager of the department? Down to the cost, the lifespan of the program, the progress per quarter, all that information is there. It's because of the interactions with the chairperson of the audit committee. Because if these program managers, as they continued to do, are not attending those meetings, The two things happen then. It happens to me too, which is why this is dashboard. Two things happen. One, the M&E unit will tell me in those meetings, because they do the work, and when we get to meeting with them, they say to me, this is the report, the problem with this report, and this has been perennial. The problem with this report is that it is not credible. You remember I said that earlier on? It's not credible. So I'm hoping that this one, in fact, I even presented this one to government. This one will make it different, because they know now, they too, they know now, they didn't know as much as they thought they know about what they're doing on the ground. Because they lack this kind of on the ground management information that gives us the detail that we want to know in order to take those decisions. It was because of the help of the Charity Nobel Committee. Thank you.
I think I need to get a response from the DG on the value for money aspect of it with regard to the issue of the audit committee. To say, are you paying them for just that they attended the meeting without implementing their recommendations? That's the question. That is directly to the DG.
The department believes that the audit committee is doing its work. We do have very rigorous sessions where they clearly point out weaknesses in every respect, insofar as whether the reports that are presented by internal audit in terms of the strategic plan, because internal audit presents a 3-year rolling plan for the areas that they continuously audit within the department. And also, insofar as the quarterly report for operational performance of the department. So we do believe that that they do their part. I think what must be done and be strengthened is on the side of the department to fully do its part. Honorable Chair, I can say that because the department has not fully implemented the findings of the audit report, then the audit committee is not doing its job. And I think it boils down to us as management doing what we are supposed to be doing.
But I thought you were doing what you're supposed to be doing. Why are you doing what you're supposed to be doing?
We are chairperson, but obviously it is not enough. We wouldn't have the kind of report. There are weaknesses in the system. It has not matured to the level that it ought to mature. That's what I tried to point out earlier.
But before I give comments to Tambi, on page 44, the scope of resolution, your last sentence says, however, the areas of concern raised by the committee, which amongst others include capacity issues, were addressed. So why should we still be talking about inability to fully do the job for which people are paid every month and they are paid in full for supposedly doing a full job?
Indeed, Chairperson.
And I think, DG, the worry for me in that statement of the audit committee, little page on campus, 38. What worries me in that statement is when they say the content and quality of the report. I think that is very, very worrying for them to use that kind of air of language to say the content and the quality of the quarterly report. It's a serious instrument on management. And it goes back to the areas around capacity that, on the other hand, that have been addressed. So I'm just saying, the picture that is being painted is not a good one. Earlier on, when we're dealing with the performance audit, we're saying, well, these are things of the past. We can't do anything about them. Let's leave them. Now we're talking the present, and the picture does not acknowledging the progress that has been made around various areas and fields, but still, we're not out of the woods yet.
I would like to also refer you to page 87. I think it's the paragraph under the heading "The Effectiveness of Internal Control," paragraph 2. That with the system. You see, I'm raising this issue to say, did you continue? I understand that the expert committee was doing its job. But I'm saying, you are definitely on the role for money aspect for it. I mean, what have you paid? You pay for the job while services run well and back. But you don't comply with the report. I'm giving you a typical example. If I read it to you, it's a paragraph that I'm presenting. It says, the system of internal control was not entirely effective for the year under review. Deficiencies in and or deviation from the system of internal control were reported by the internal auditors and the Auditor General of South Africa. In certain circumstances, the matters reported previously have not been fully and satisfactorily addressed. The delays in implementing management action plans on internal and external audit reports have been escalated to the accounting officer and the executive authority by the audit committee, and the management has made a commitment to address this shortcoming. So the issue is that I'm ready to say, when you are paying this service provider, I think in your mind you should ready to say, you have provided a good service like you are saying, but now why can't you implement what they are saying? Nevertheless, Chairman, let me move to page 79. Note 26. The regular expenditure for the period under review, it's 7,835,000 rand as a result of non-compliance with supply chain management and overspending on certain restitution projects without the necessary approvals as per the delegations of authority. These digits are happening under your nose, not your filter. Can you share with us and outline the details of this irregular expenditure? I believe you knew you were coming to us and would love to. How is this amount of 8.7 million arrived at? Breakdown. And then you must also, under the circumstances, indicate to us, because this, I believe there are officials that are within the department that committed these transgressions. And since you know this report, I think this report, you've been using it since 12 August 2012. There should be slight progress, a lot of it, on the steps that you have undertaken to make sure that instances of this nature doesn't recur again. Can you share with us on the steps that the breakdown of the irregular expenditure of steps, if there are cases that are taking place, the progress report, you know you're going to appear before us, you know, and this is the stuff that we as members will like to know.
Justin, thank you very much. There are various items that are involved in this particular area. I would like to first draw the attention of the committee to the previous financial year, where we paid, for instance, a lot of money on interest, on late payments. In the last financial year, for instance, we had 6.3 million, or which was incurred as interest paid. For 2011-12, this amount had decreased from 6.3 million to 3.3 million. We paid court orders. We paid interest on court orders.
Sir, you're dealing with the full expenditure. I'm still on the irregular.
Okay. No,
that's why I was raising my hand, because not addressing the irregular expenditure.
Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Again, we can draw a similar link to that. In 2010-11, on the supply chain, the amount there is on this current report is 1.9 million. The honourable member is asking about improvement in that area. In 2010-11, the amount in this area was 8.8 million. So the action again taken there
has led to the reduction of that amount. We have had a series of challenges with regard to restitution, and we reported when we last appeared before this committee of a series of interventions that we had put in place to try and bring stability and control in that particular environment. During that period, we were talking about, in 2010-11, we were talking about 10.2 million, 34 million rand in this particular area. But this amount of money has now decreased to what is currently reflected in the financial statement. For instance, when it relates to us trying to enforce accountability among the officials, and the honorable member said some of these things we should be able to anticipate, many of them in the current financial, during the period under the review, were historical and they were coming into the surface during this particular period. But I'm merely trying to say to the honorable member, this is not good enough. But I'm saying if you compare to where we were in 2010-11 to where we are now, we are merely trying to draw the honorable member to the fact that the attempts that we have put in place to correct the situation have yielded some results. That's the point that we are trying to say. I'm admitting that it is not good enough.
The follow-up to that, I've seen that the expenditure has decreased, but still my question remains unanswered. Because that 1.9 million of non-compliant with supply chain policies, my question is very simple and straightforward. Who were the officials involved? And what steps, because I indicated that you got this report long ago, there should be a lot of progress to that effect, one direction that you have taken and the steps that you have followed in as an accounting officer to that effect. That was the gist of my question. This issue of the decline is common because we have seen that in the report because they will make a comparison for the past 3 years. But the question remains unanswered.
Thanks, Captain. We do have a register of all the irregular expenditure and all the process of irregular expenditure, and we can make it available. What we have decided to do is to create a compliance committee which goes through all these areas that has, if a person has transgressed the internal policies around supply chain or through all the policies overall, we go through that compliance committee, we identify, we analyze what the problem was. And now that we have got a full functional labor relation unit at a directorate level, we then, as part of our procedures, we then say if there are issues that are labor related, we take it to labor relations for further disciplinary action to be taken. And if there are criminal related issues, we take it to our legal unit to open a case and issues like that. What we have identified as a weakness in the internal control in the previous year is that although the PFMA and Treasury have got a very clear guideline of what irregular and fruitless expenditure is, there was always ambiguity on when do you charge a person with financial misconduct. Now with the initiatives done by the Public Service Commission, they clarified what financial misconduct is all about, and we're incorporating that into our policy so that everybody in the organization can know exactly what are the consequences. But in the meantime, we are taking further steps, disciplinary action, and we've got a list, I'm thinking I didn't bring it, but we've got a list of cases that went to labor relation and what action has been taken against officials in terms of...
Well, I think the last part is exactly what we wanted. The other part in terms of the conceptual framework of how you want to deal with things, process and procedure, it's fine, it empowers us, but in relation to the officials involved in this, what has been done, who are these officials, at what level are they? I think that's the kind of information that we want. Maybe, Comrade Mutan, can we report? We note that down. You send us that spreadsheet of who are the officials and at what level, what part of this 1.9 million were they involved in, and what measures have you subsequently taken, and where are you
in relation to whatever profits you would have taken vis-a-vis those that you have condoned. You would say, well, this one, Peter Paul Vele was involved in that one of 20,000 we've condoned, so we know it's sorted out. This one, there's a different process. This is where it is. So that we're able to talk to the specific issues that are here, not just the broad and general outline.
Sir, I'm covered with your proposal because this is the information that is supposed to be within their fingertips. Secondly, also to say, if somebody didn't comply with the supply chain policy, why do you need DPSA to come and give you guidelines? It's only in cases where there's no appetite to discipline the employees. That's the bottom line. You don't have to wait for DPSA because you know this person didn't follow compliance because the supply chain policy in place, unless you want to tell us also that there's no supply chain policy in place because it also gives proof what needs to happen. I agree with you, Chairperson, to say they need to do it within a reasonable time because they got this report long ago.
Can we have this information by next week in relation to the first one and the second one? So for the end of next week, if we can have that, I think that will be fine.
Okay. On page 80, it's on the fruitless and the wasteful expenditure. The department incurred a fruitless and wasteful expenditure amounting to 6,700,000,000, which was incurred as a result of interest paid on late payments and on interest paid as compelled by the court order. On the other one, on the interest paid on late payments, definitely somebody who has delegated his responsibility, as Honorable Hosh says. And then again, I had reason to believe that when they came in here, because you see, on their report, when you read paragraph 27.3, they said interest paid on late payment, department investigation in progress for the 3 million. Today, said here, we are on the 4th of March. They got this report in August. Not yet. Can we get the progress report to that effect? Because I'm worried about the turnaround time, also on the appetite by the department to discipline, like there's no such thing.
I would imagine that in all of this, Commissioner Minister, the descendants of the peasants who were evicted from their land have hardly taken to come into court to claim any interest for the payment. But maybe that's another point. Can we talk to this 6 million? Find out what progress they've made.
Okay. On the one about interest compared by the court, we had said it related to all those restitution cases from previous years. And we're trying to identify who can we hold responsible with this late interest. And we went to the state attorney for legal advice on the matter. Based on their opinion, they couldn't find a person that they can say is a person that can be held responsible. But they then let it back to us, gave back to us as a department, because the majority of those people are the people that the minister was saying that they have left the department.
Can we have sight of the letter you sent to the state law advisors and their response? So we can just note them down to the board. So we can certify that indeed you had asked for the correct information, or had given them the correct information, and that indeed they have responded as you say.
Let's deal with the second one. The second one, I just received progress through an SMS last week, so I'm still going to go through the details. The matter advocate is that we have won it in court, so which means that we might be able to recover that money, because we have raised the contingent asset from our books. They
Yes, they had also taken us to court, but we had raised the contingent liability assets from our side. We may be able to recover this money from the person. So the new legal process now is going to be instituted to get the money that we as a department have lost.
Okay, when I read this annual report on this analysis of current year analysis of fitness and whistle, it was reported in order to say disciplinary investigations are in progress. And you see, said, and that's the question that I raised with the accounting officer when I started, whether he takes this committee seriously. They prepared for this meeting, and they knew they were coming here, and I believe they know the contents of their report. And then this thing of them coming, because certain things like this, what you put in your report, these are the things that are within your fingertips. You'll be able to talk on. Now we are being told I received an SMS last week about this, and then after receiving the SMS, what did you do with that SMS? Because you know we like to get the records. You're not appearing before us for the first time here. You know, this was the question that we've been raised to say, it was a breakdown in the past. So when you came in here, you knew definitely that we're going to ask this type of information. So, nevertheless, despite your ruling... By the way, you were an accounting officer in your previous life. So, you know what you're talking about. Okay. Who has a consultant and an accounting officer? Okay. So, on a draft note, I think this can also be provided as early as when they reach the office tomorrow, because this is the information that I have. But nevertheless, despite your only... No, I fully agree with you, but I mean, if they don't have information here, we can't squeeze it out of them. It's not here, but I agree with you. When people come to appear before us, one detail, we don't want generalization. Comrade Chair, I will give you an opportunity at the end for the minister. If there are any issues you want to raise, I'll give you the opportunity to. Okay, continue. Page 44, on the report of the accounting officer, paragraph 11, it reads, all assets that meet the recognition criteria in terms of the National Treasury Reporting Framework are recorded in the asset register in the department, and the no major challenges were experienced. But when you read the review report, it's saying the accounting officer did not take reasonable steps to monitor the changes in the immovable assets. So, I don't know, because on your report you're saying you are complying with that, and then the AG on the other end finds out that you didn't do that. So, I want to understand the context in which you... Is this a standard report that you normally just put and sign and submit as part of the annual report? What's going on? Because this is contrary to what the AD has found. I want to get clarity from you. Coming on.
No, Chairperson, the point we're making is we were reporting on the progress that we're making in this regard prior to the AG pronouncing on this financial. It was not an intention to contradict the AG. We were honestly believing that with the information that was at our disposal, what we were reporting was accurate. We accept the conclusion of the Auditor General that we could have done more in terms of ensuring that there were proper controls in the movement of the assets of the department.
Okay.
diligent, it goes back to that statement of the audit committee around content and quality of information. I don't want to believe on what Comrade Mutami.
Partially covering what you are saying, but also this what the so-called Koshi says, delegation of responsibilities.
It is pronounced dereliction of responsibility.
Yes. And then, you see, also here, the scheduled section of the Constitution is being violated and complied with. I'm reading it.
The Constitution
is the supreme law of the country, I think we all know and understand that. So accounting officer, back again to my question that I raised earlier when I started on my opening statement, I think they are seriously, this committee seriously together with the, your responsibility now, as the PM may prescribe that you need to do.
I will take it to your courage. It was more of a rhetorical question of emphasis. Ramfundis, Comrade Roy.
Thank you, Chairperson. That's a matter of emphasis in terms of the performance department. It looks like the department will have to up their performance, where almost every organization or body that has to express an opinion has a reservation. You have just indicated you've already heard from what the body committee has to say and what the auditor general has to say. But that is mainly what the DG said. So let's go back to page 50 and compare it with the page 50 right on top there. As I said, it's just a matter of emphasis. So that's not to be blamed by the whole issue. After all said and done, paragraph 28 on page 50. Lack of effective monitoring and evaluation over action plans and related commitment to address previously reported root causes resulted in recurrence on numerous findings that we reported on in the prior year. So that is why I'm saying it looks like the department will have to up their performance and see. Because there is a thread of discontent from all the bodies that have to express a word of on the way they are doing. So that's what I wanted to say.
Comrade Chair, earlier on you made the comment. Earlier on you made the comment that public servants in this department are paid in full. Those were your words. You are wrong. They are not paid in full. They are paid in full plus performance rewards. And I want them to justify, on the basis of what you've heard, the performance rewards that they receive. We have heard that they've missed 45% of their planned targets. We have heard from Comrade McCumbin that year after year after year they qualify for audit reports. We have heard this morning that their dependency on consultants has increased from 100,000 Rand per annum in 2008 over 600,000 currently. Despite all of that, Chair, if you turn to page 70, if you turn to page 70 of the annual report, I want them to please justify their performance awards, which in the current year amount to over 21 million rand, if I'm reading it correctly, almost five times the 4 million rand of the previous year. If they can justify that. If they can justify also, after looking at page 147, if you look at page 147 of the annual report, page 147 deals with job evaluation. If you look at that table of page 147, there are 5,467 posts in this department. Only 676 have been evaluated. That's about 12%. So despite a lack of job evaluation, despite the things we've heard this morning, people are still receiving performance rewards. Please, can they justify that? That's my first question. And my second one is, I'm concerned about the table on page 147
regard to job evaluation, with the leaders in this department, the management, are not being evaluated. If you look at SMS band B, C and D, out of 12, C and D, out of 12 positions, only one has been evaluated. Why is that? Finally, when last has the DG been evaluated? That cannot justify, after what you've heard today, performance bonuses or rewards of in excess of 20 million. That cannot be justified. We want the money back up.
Right.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the last one, the job evaluation relates to not the performance assessment that Honorable Ainsley is referring to. It's related to the determination of whether people are performing at optimal level in terms of their job description. That is the job evaluation, not the performance assessment that determines bonus.
Can you repeat that? I'm
trying to interpret the point Honorable Ainsley is raising in 1.147 on job evaluation. That one does not relate to performance assessment, which then becomes the basis of determining whether or not bonuses must be paid. It relates to the evaluation of level of posts and job responsibilities. That is what that one relates to.
To achieve what?
Chairperson, those reports must be evaluated so that the responsibility on that post are equivalent to the responsibility and salary that the person...
The posts are being evaluated, but not the people who hold those posts.
No, that's a separate point, Honorable Chair. The relation to that point, What we have prioritized, Chairperson, you will recall that when we were here the last time, we had said there was quite a number of staff members who had not been evaluated, ranging from level 1 up to level 450. The bonuses that are reflected here are bonuses of people below from level 12 going down, from middle managers and to the junior staff of the department. Those are the people that were primarily prioritized. It is not a payment of bonuses to DDGs, certainly not in the last, not during the period under review and chief director.
What difference would it make? I mean, if a bonus...
I'm hoping that I'm trying to look at the department, I'm looking at this report. The areas of weakness in this report, in the main, it is management that must take overall responsibility for the weaknesses. If people at the lower level are doing their work or not doing their work, it is management that is not telling them that they are not doing their work, they are not performing. So I think it would be unfair to say the whole department, including the people at lower level of the organization, that are trying to get services to the people that and say they are not doing their work and not recognized simply because management is failing.
No, that's fine. I think the first of the question is that is this 21 million justified? Is it justified?
So, now, we do consider this very, very carefully. I think perhaps...
I want you to convince us that it was carefully considered.
Yes, Chairperson, it was carefully considered. We can then explain how, in fact, some of these assessments were conducted, particularly when it comes to senior management, because it's not just me as a DDG sitting with a senior manager and agreeing that you must get a bonus. We've tried to put some controls in place. Must be improved.
What extraordinary work beyond the normal work prescribed that people do to earn bonuses? Well, don't get bonuses here, there is no such a check. So, I have no understanding. So I'm asking that you say the person does a job for which he or she is paid every month, but has really gone beyond the call of duty and feel compelled
that this person must get an additional pay.
People can only get bonuses if they have got contracts, performance management agreements, with very specific deliverables. And if they meet their targets after the performance agreement, that is what they are paid to do. They can't be paid for meeting the targets. If we have said we'll acquire 300,000 hectares of land, that is what we have committed with the resources available. But if we double that number, that's something very different.
But we see on page 49 that you could only meet 45% of your stated target. Just meet for only 45% of the planned target were met. Yeah, I'm done.
The AG also did have that he didn't maintain a transparent, effective regarding control regarding performance management. So why is he paying for performance whenever there's no control?
I think I have said that if, for instance, we are talking about the financial year where the department spends 98.3% of its budget
and only achieved 45% of its target.
Yes. But I'm saying, Chesterton, what it will take if the Chesterton is saying, how did you reward?
So we just want to help us understand. I think that should be the understanding. Just throw more light so that we can better appreciate the internal process in the department.
I think Chesterton will have to then say, take the operation, the annual performance plan of the department, and look in part two of the report.
Which pages?
There will be.
Can we go to the pages so we're able to check? These are the things we plan to do, we have overachieved, and thus people know. And this is how we did it. So we can look at what you have planned to do and what you have achieved. And it might be a similar question from our side because we don't understand. So I think as you explained, it might become even more clear.
The DG is not called a case. They've missed a large number of their targets. 45% of the target has missed, other targets have missed. But that's beyond debate. That they have not achieved. What I'm keen to know is, when last did the DG and his senior management be evaluated? Not the office, the person in the office. When last have they been evaluated? But the rest of our paying bonuses and giving rewards, it's not in dispute. If you're missing minimum of 45% of your targets, it's not justified. So let's get to the next question. When last have senior people been evaluated? Not their positions, the chairs they sit in, but their work that they do when they sit in that chair.
My own assessment for the financial year and a review has been done. The DDGs that report to me, we have done the assessments of the last quarter, of the first half of this financial year. That is where we are in terms of the performance assessment. We must assess them at the end of this financial year for the financial year 2012-13. So we have been able to catch up with the backlog. There may be one or two cases outstanding, but the majority of the assessments were done.
All right. Now I'll still give you correction. Let me give Dr. George, and then the chair of the portfolio committee, and then okay, DG?
Yes, the assessment, the performance, my own performance assessment has been done internally, departmentally, between myself and the minister. What has been decided that there is going to be a panel of other ministers and maybe the DC in the Public Service Commission, who will then sit and conduct the full evaluation on whether I have performed according to the expected list.
Okay. This one. Okay. Dr. George?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a very quick question on the bonuses. In that number that was cited by my colleague, was there a payment to the DG and to the CFO for a bonus?
No.
Okay, no. Koriche?
Thank you very much, Koriche. I really appreciate the class we have put through here today. We do not have the benefit of the other form of report that we only look at the raw material that is put in front of us. We have had an interaction with the DG on parts of this report, and we have asked for a list of the managers that have received performance rewards. We were specifically interested in the areas of not meeting targets vis-a-vis those payments, so that we can determine for ourselves, not depend on them, as to whether these payments are based on going an extra mile or not. Because it looks for us that the department is regularly, it's a regular occurrence where they lay off people off the hook. It has been canvassed sufficiently in this meeting. Consultants were left off the hook without paying any penalties and without performing the functions for which they have been procured. But it does look like even the staff are going through that experience, because on page 72 and 73, the department has written off debt, breach of contract, salary debts, and tax debts, even in the office of the Secretary General. If you went to page 75 and 74, on the same issue of debts, on page 74, it does indicate that there are claims receivable from the expenditure recoverable on staff debt, other debts, and but if you look at staff debt on page 75, 6.5 million is the outstanding debt. What is not indicated in this report, how old these debts are, and if there was a commitment to collect this money. If you look at page 75, the debt of 2010-11 as compared to the debt of 2011-12, some of them are increasing instead of decreasing, which in my view indicates the lack of commitment to collect them. Because there are two amounts on top there, 3.4 million in 2011-2012, but 3.2 million in 2010-2011. It cannot be going slowly like that if there was a commitment to collect. I will not raise the other questions because I think as a guest here, I will reserve the responsibility when they come back to the committee. But I feel like the minister, that the assistants gathered in these meetings can only assist the executive authority to do more in taking action. And I think DG should be compelled by the minister to show, as of the 31st of March 2012, there were 32 cases under investigation in the department, to show how many of those people have been dealt with effectively and how much money has been recovered from those processes, because some of those cases are related to procurement irregularities. Because if we continue to have these meetings and listen to Ms. Kang saying the 2009, the DG was here being a DDG, and these people pointed out to him, and is now having authority, and these other senior officials over his head are no longer there, with a determined minister to push him to achieve more. What has he achieved? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Comrade Chief. Well, I will hand over to the minister. So it was safe to say that DG, the one thing that seemed to be outstanding and which we need to correct more perspectively is the area around consequences for wrongdoing. There should be no tolerance whatsoever for transgression. We can come here and give all manner of explanations about what happened, how it happened, but the fact of the matter is non-compliance is not acceptable, and for every act of non-compliance there must be consequences, the absence of which makes a mockery of the laws that are there. And I'm sure, Comrade Minister, the ability of any leader to enforce discipline will always make or break that leader in any environment. So we want to see an energetic effort to deal with this issue. And we don't want to operate in a space of, you know, of saying that it is not necessarily possible for us to get these things right. They will always be receivable, you know. Our endpoint should be we want to get it right and work towards getting it right, rather than to move from a premise that from the very beginning say, you know what, we might not get this stuff right. So I suppose you need to develop a thicker skin, DG, and really lean very heavily on the lower level so that they too can lean on those below them, and everyone can lean on those below them until the entire system is in its place. Complete Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Jefferson, I am indebted to you and members of your committee, all of them, including the guests for today's session. I am very, very empowered in this meeting. I understand even deeper the things that I've been interacting with the team on. I also am even more aware of the shortcomings, even in that direction, which I had with him. I am committed to doing the right thing. We have had our own sessions. We're clear about what we need to do with them as a team, including the DG as a leader of the team. All of us are there. I think we're even there today between us in terms of what should be done and the consequences of not doing it. I don't want to be called before this meeting again by you, Jay. And then come here and find that I think really which clearly like the 45% achievement of targets and so on, which is glaring. I don't want to come back here for that. And therefore, in closing, I really appreciate everything which has been said by honourable members. I will follow it to the letter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We want to thank you and the departmental officials led by the DG. Thanks for the interaction and the effort to clarify the issue. I think we are now a little more clear about certain issues than we were before. Only we can just take note of the issues that we agreed must be sent to us for next week. Let's send them through so that committee members can have to also thank Mr. Treasurer for being here, because you never know, something might arise that might require Mr. Treasurer to assist us.
if it has not arisen like today, well, good and fine. But if it did, it would have been indebted to you. The auditor general team, led by the deputy auditor general, we are all thankful for your being here, spending. We might from time to time require your assistance to clarify certain issues and confirm certain areas. We're happy that you're always here. We argue with confidence in your presence because we know we have witnesses from our side. Kumbeche, Ngozaku. Kumbeche, tomorrow is transport and health. We have it right. Yeah. Thanks for today.